last meeting, we had a rather controversial issue, and it became a little bit unpleasant. A couple of things to be aware of. We had a letter complaining, and I appreciate the fact that they wrote and the reason for their complaints. Up here, we don't always hear the murmuring that goes on in the back of the room. I can tell when it reaches a certain level of volume, but we don't hear individual comments, and sometimes we don't even hear the murmurs if they're quiet. That is totally inappropriate behavior. So if it's going on back there and you're in the back of the room and you're having a problem hearing or you hear derogatory remarks, I'm going to institute a new little signal, this. So if you hear somebody back there talking when they shouldn't be, do that. I will see that, and then I'll be able to stop the meeting and ask that that talking stop. We take our own responsibility for our actions. I have had an apology from one of the people who was outside and harassing someone afterwards. We need to be responsible. We need to understand that we don't all agree on issues, and sometimes it can get very contentious because it's our emotions and it's our livelihood, and I appreciate that. But we also need to behave like responsible adults. So please, let's do that. If anyone is not behaving that way and you are aware of it, please come into the room and tell one of our staff that there's a problem outside. Again, we're not aware of that. We don't know until after the fact, so we can't do anything about it. So please, if there is a problem outside or anybody feels uncomfortable, it's part of the reason we rearranged the room here so that nobody's back is to the audience. Please let us know. We don't want it to happen. We do want to take care of it, but we don't always know that it's happening. So do any of the other council members wish to comment on this? Melody?
Yeah, I read the letter. It was from one of the board of trustees for EcoSlow. And as a person who made several public comments here as a resident and a citizen, I can say that some of my comments were unpopular at times, and I would feel nervous with my back to the entire room. And sometimes I would hear people laughing, chuckling, saying things under their breath. And so what I've always hoped for is that it would be a productive thing to come to City Council and a very safe thing to come to City Council. It's important that we have all citizens respected so that they'll all show up and say what needs to be said at that podium. I think we need open dialogue, we need freedom of speech, and we need respect for each other as citizens. And then I would probably just thank Janice for this idea. We're not trying to look like the Board of Supervisors, that's for sure. But I think this is a grand idea to put the speaker over it that way so that they literally are then talking not only to us, but to the audience as well.
Any other comments? Betty?
I think, I guess I want it to be known that it went beyond just comments in the audience, but there was intimidating statements outside the meeting before it occurred and after when people were leaving, and there was potential for physical abuse. And in my mind, anticipating when something is heated is smart to have maybe an extra person in the room. I would not say that, of course, we don't want that and we want everyone to be responsible, but that they will come back.
Dad, any comments? Okay. All right, so let's all be on good behavior from now on. A couple of other announcements. The Area Agency on Aging is looking for nominations to be considered for the Board of Directors or Advisory Council of the Central Coast Commission for Senior Citizens. They meet once a month on the fourth Friday, and they would like over 51% of their members to be over age 60. They're particularly interested in securing members who are either ethnic minorities or persons with disabilities, and these people can be any age. So they are looking for a diverse group to staff their business. They are having an open house in Santa Maria on Wednesday, September 27th at 10 a.m., but they're taking nominations now. So if you want more information, I have this up here at the break. Let's see, other meetings that are coming up. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has conducted an integrated assessment of nuclear power plant performance, and they've scheduled a public meeting to discuss the results. It's going to be on Tuesday, July 25th at 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon at Embassy Suites Hotel. On that same day, they will provide members of the community an opportunity to ask questions and provide comments at 6:30 at the Embassy Suites Hotel the same day. So if you're interested in that, I also have information on that up here. Another thing that's happening, this on Thursday the 27th, developing a conceptual diagram of the ecosystem. This is going to happen at the Inn at Morro Bay, and it is Slow Sea is the group that's doing it. They're developing a conceptual diagram that depicts the local ecosystem and the key interactions with it. It's called a conceptionary meeting. It engages everyone, resource managers, fishermen, scientists, environmentalists, business interests, in creating an inclusive and insightful understanding of the watershed, estuary, and nearshore areas. And that, again, is going to be on the 27th. It's from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at the Inn at Morro Bay. One other thing that I wanted to say, that you've all received in the mail, if you're a Morro Bay resident, information on the possible tax, sales tax increase, and postcards that we asked you to respond with. And I've been reading the ones that came with comments. We're cataloging all of them. But a couple of you asked, how much did this cost? And I really, again, appreciate your comments. If you haven't sent them in yet, please do. We've had over 400 returned already, and it's really helpful. We're all going to get a chance to read them. And I, again, appreciate your comments. Send them in if you haven't. Other announcements? Dad? Betty?
Yes, I have three or four announcements. First of all, on the overhead, you'll see a picture of a little white poodle. He's a boy. He's 4 years old. His name is Tank. He got picked up on Old Creek Road on July 1st and is missing. We know someone has him in hopes that they will see his picture, or maybe you'll know who has him and ask them to call. He is microchipped if someone would have him scanned at their particular vet. So if you have seen this little guy. Second, there is, as the City Council has passed, there is a Bill 840. That has to do with health care for all. Linda Merrill's been outside gathering signatures. The intent is to hope that we can get enough signatures to encourage the governor to put this on the ballot this fall, to have the legislature and he approve of it so it doesn't have to go on to the ballot and do it the way we would potentially do our two initiatives that have come before us tonight. And August 12th, will be the statewide kickoff for this ballot or this Senate measure here in our very own city at the Triangle Park up by Harbor and Morro Bay Boulevard at 12 noon. Next, my third announcement has to do, and it bounces off the area aging announcement that Ms. Peters made. It comes from the Healthy Communities Institute. And there's a brochure, and I have it if anyone's interested. It mentions five different ways that a city can get involved with making our aging population and our communities mesh better. The title on the front cover says that those of us who are going to become 65 in the next 15 years will double that age group. And so there's going to be a lot of us around that will need different kinds of transportation, housing, employment, support services. So if anyone's interested in that document, I have it. And then my last announcement is from the League of California Cities. We had a meeting in Solvang the last week, and I was able to go to that. Just a couple of things that may be of interest to the public on that is that the bill that's before the legislature right now between TV, SBC, Global, I don't mean
Verizon.
TV, which will prevent the use of redevelopment money for any activities enabling the city hall or other city facilities from being built. So we cannot use redevelopment fees. And I don't know if we're aware of that or not, but I thought that was important to mention. And then the last item that was of major import for the public is that the state Senate is looking at doing other ways to encourage and facilitate workforce housing in the communities.
Thank you. Bill, anything? Melody? Okay. All right. Closed session report. We didn't have one, so there isn't one. That's easy. So now, John King is here from LS Power. And John, if you'd like to come forward and let us know your plans.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Mayor, and thank you to the entire council for inviting me here to speak tonight. I had the opportunity to present to the city council members separately about 6 weeks ago, and many of them thought it would be a good idea if I shared the same information about Ellis Power, our company, who's now the owner of the Morro Bay Power Plant, with members of the community, and which I'm happy to do. And we've got a short presentation tonight. I'll try not to spend too much time and bore anybody with it, but I'll give you a brief company history and maybe talk a little bit about our plans in California in general and Morro Bay in particular. And then at the end, after the public comment period, I'd be happy to answer a few questions. So, Kathy? It's a little bit small print, so I'll try and cover the high points. So this is just a brief overview slide of our company. We are a private company. We've been in business since 1990. Everyone always wants to know what LS stands for. It's our two founders, Mike Liebelson and Mike Siegel. Mr. Liebelson is retired, and Mr. Siegel is our CEO and quite active in the business. We are primarily a power development and ownership company. We've got over 100 energy professionals in every aspect of the business, from construction, business development construction, through asset management, operation, and ownership. We have an additional 300 O&M contractors. Most of our employees, 400 megawatts of gas-fired generation assets, and we have a large coal-fired development program in the Midwest and the East, and one project in Nevada. We also have a large transmission project and a wind project that we're developing in Nevada. One of the things the company did was when they decided to open an office in the West was to try and hire local talent. I've been working in the California development of power generation for the past 11 years. And we've also hired other professionals, some of them from Duke. Some of you may know Randy Hickok, who's in the audience today. And Randy was with Duke Energy and headed their California portfolio. And he heads asset management for Ellis Power in the West. And David Hicks, who some of you probably know as well, who heads public relations for us in the West. This is just a graphical representation of how the Ellis Power Group is set up. We have our power development company, and that's the historical company that's developed over 8 facilities, 4,000 megawatts, and we're active in both coal and gas-fired development. And in the past, we've also managed a lot of energy facilities for third parties. We are primarily focused on managing our own portfolio now, especially with the Duke acquisition, having made us a much larger company. Last year, we went out and we wanted to raise capital because we saw an opportunity where a lot of power generation assets, a lot of traditional companies were exiting the business. A lot of utility subsidiaries like Duke decided that they'd no longer be in the independent power business and they would go back to being just regulated utilities. So we saw that as an opportunity, and we decided to raise some capital. The way to raise capital and power after everything that happened in the 2001-2002 timeframe is not to go to the public markets, but to raise private capital. And we raised a private equity fund last year of approximately $1.2 billion. It's managed by Ellis Power Development, and it's one of the largest funds dedicated solely to the power sector. Ellis Power Equity Partners is the entity that through Ellis Power Generation, which is in the right column, acquired the Duke portfolio, which was 7 power plants in the West and 2 in the Northeast for a total of 6,500 megawatts of generation. And on the next page, we give kind of a brief overview. This shows us here at Morro Bay at the power plant where Randy is, in San Diego and in Sacramento. Just to talk about what we see in the Western markets, we saw an opportunity where several people were exiting the market, and they were selling their power plants at less than the replacement cost. But I think if many of you read the papers, you'll note that there is a shortage right now forecast for just even this summer, even with all the hydro coming out of the northwest in Southern California. And in all of California, not as much was done as should have been done to satisfy the growing energy needs. In 2001, with the combination of the new generation that had been built and the economy softening, there was a small oversupply in California. And most of the building stopped at that time. Well, demand has been recovering, and not much new generation's been built. So California, again, is forecasting shortages and throughout the state in 2007, 2008. What we see as developers is when there's problems, you try and find solutions. That usually leads to good business opportunities. And we saw that business opportunity in California. It's a challenging business environment. I think everyone understands that. But that's why we tried to hire people with local knowledge of the market. And we hired most of the, almost the entire Duke team that was managing the portfolio out here, and have added to them some other professionals to help us manage this large portfolio and to develop new generation assets. Kathy? Ellis Power Generation is the company that was created to own the Duke portfolio, and that was approximately a $1.7 billion acquisition, so it was a very substantial acquisition for our company. We put over $600 million of equity in it, so it's very well capitalized, a conservative capital structure. We manage 9 gas-fired plants. 7 of them are in California or serve California. Even our Arizona plants are connected to the California market. We are very actively pursuing redevelopment opportunities at these facilities. I'll talk about the other facilities first. South Bay is our plant in San Diego. Again, it's an older generation facility, and we just recently filed an application for certification with the California Energy Commission just last Friday. But we very much support developing a new power plant here. We, of course, would need a customer, as we are a pretty conservative company. We don't build any new generation without having a customer that's willing to buy the offtake, all the power out of that facility. A customer has to identify the need and be willing to acquire the power output, and then we're very interested in making the investment and building the facility. That's the business we're in. We do talk to PG&E and Southern California Edison, the two most likely customers for a power generation facility in Morro Bay. They both have ongoing requests for proposal. Right now, there's not an immediate need identified by them, but we continue to talk to them. And as transmission infrastructure continues to get built out in the state, I think there'll be opportunities in the long run to build the new plant at Morro Bay, the repowered facility. The last point on this slide that I want to get across was the power plant operator, the Wood Group. We hired the Wood Group to be our O&M contractor. The Wood Group subsequently hired all the employees from Morro Bay. Every employee received an offer, just like at all our other power plants as well. We selected the Wood Group because they're a very strong company with a worldwide reputation for gas turbine technology and O&M, or operations and maintenance of power facilities. They were not the lowest bidder, but they offered the best management team. They agreed to open a West Coast office, and we felt that they were a very forthright company and good operator, and that they'd be a good choice for the employees at Morro Bay and our other power plants. Our energy manager is an entity owned by Bear Stearns, and they are the ones who actually acquire the gas and sell the power output of our plant. In both cases, LS Powered does not have a very large back office to handle the hundreds of employees it takes to be an O&M operator or an energy manager. In both cases, it takes IT systems, it takes training programs, environmental health and safety, and we found that by partnering with world-class organizations that make that their core business, that we get better service, world-class service, and it works very well for us and for the employees. So that's our philosophy. This is a list of our power generation assets. I'm sorry if it's difficult to read. I'll read down the list, but we acquired the Moss Landing facilities, both the modern combined cycle facility that went into operation in 2002 and the existing conventional steam facility. And that facility is similar to the Morro Bay facility here. South Bay in San Diego, which I mentioned, Oakland, two plants in Arizona, and then two plants in the Northeast for a total of 6,500 megawatts. This chart's pretty simple. What you see is that Ellis Power Generation is the owner of the power generation assets. We have a finance company where we raised the debt, which helped us to acquire the company. And then you see all the legal entities. We actually acquired the stock of all the entities and didn't do asset acquisitions. On the next page, this is simply a map, and this shows all of the current business that Ellis Power is conducting in the power sector. So this shows the Duke assets that we acquired, as well as all our current active development projects. On page 9, I just want to stress, and this is what's been stressed to me by our CEO, is that our primary business is, as an owner and operator of power plants, safety comes first, environmental responsibility, and regulatory compliance. We take it all very seriously. We spend the majority of our time making sure that we manage these assets in a safe and environmentally sensitive manner. And we are working very closely to continue to be involved. We think community involvement starts at the power plant with our employees. And as a company, we support our employees being active in the community, and we funnel our charitable activities through our power plant employees. Although they're actually employees of an O&M operator, they're acting on behalf of Ellis Power. We are focused, secondly, in further development. We think that California needs new energy development, needs new power plants, and that is what we do as a company. And so we're very active in that. And part of that in California is to be involved in the market, the regulatory proceedings, the market structure discussions that are ongoing now, including how to develop a capacity market that can send the signals to incent new investment before it's needed, because there's a long lead time, especially in California with the strict environmental permitting policies that we have, which are great. We're happy to follow along and to meet all of those standards, but it does add a lot of long time to the timetable. So you really need the signals in the market 4 years in advance of when you need new power generation online. What you've seen is right now people are getting the signals and it's 2 years or a year and a half away, well, maybe not even a year and a half, a year away from next summer when the California ISO is expecting shortfalls in terms of power generation. So we think that's an important part of our role in California as well. And my last slide is simply, this is a list of our power employees in the West. We're proud of the group. I think we've got a good group of energy professionals. This is our management team. If you want more information on Ellis Power, we put our website up there. It's pretty simple. It's lspower.com, and also our phone number for our San Jose office. And that's the extent of my presentation.
Great. Thank you very much, John.
Okay.
And as was announced, he will be staying, and after public comment, if there are questions that you have directed to him, we will ask him to come back and respond to them. We're not going to get into a dialogue, but yes. Yes, I'm sorry. Of course. Yes. I'm sorry, John. John?
Mr. King? I'm sorry. I should have immediately said I had one question to ask you, just to clarify something, and if Kathy was going to work the PowerPoint. I wanted to take you back to that organizational chart of the properties, because the one that looks like this
yes.
that we'd seen earlier. Because when you see this chart, there it is. I wanted to give you a chance to explain to everybody why Morro Bay winds up in that left column with South Bay and Oakland, and not over with like Moss Landing, which we might have felt more more affiliation with or something, but why was this the company structured this way to put those three, including us, on that left-hand column?
It was really a negotiation with the lenders. You know, our preferences would be not to give the lenders direct liens against the power plants, and they insisted on direct liens, which gives them a lien against the actual assets, on the modern combined cycle facilities, which are all the ones bunched up under LS Power Generation. The Morro Bay, South Bay, and Oakland don't have the modern combined cycle facilities, and most of the value in acquiring the portfolio was in the modern combined cycle facilities, and the lenders insisted on having direct liens against those assets.
And then, is it true that the Morro Bay plant can be sold separately from all the other plants by LS because of its arrangement over there?
And all of our plants could be sold separately. Yeah, there's no prohibition on that in the arrangement. It's just simply the lenders do not insist on a direct lien because of the value, the majority of it, the preponderance of it, is in the five plants that you see underneath the finance company.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Any other council questions? Sorry, I didn't. Okay, thank you. All right, now is the public comment period. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. And remember, we do have the sales tax initiative on our public hearing, so wait until that for those comments. And now you have a wall you can lean on while you wait. Okay, we'll let the noise die down a little there. Okay. Henriette.
Good evening. My name is Henriette Groot. I live in Cayucas. I'm a member of CAPE, and that stands for the Coastal Alliance on Plant Expansion. And the reason I'm here tonight is I wanted to be sure that LS Power was aware of our group, which was formed when Duke first announced its plans for building a new plant, but using the old cooling system. And so I thought that Mr. King should hear about our group and our long battle with Duke, because we served as interveners in the process before the CEC. It took 5 years or more. Indeed, Duke did get the permit, which was not docketed, but we are proud of the record we created, because the record shows very clearly that if you do damage to the marine environment, there really is no good way of fixing it. And the marine environment, protection of the marine environment, was and is CAPE's main concern. However, in the process, it also became very clear, and I think this should be an issue of great concern to Morro Bay citizens, that shorter smokestacks will cause more PM, particulate matter, to rain down on the community and cause serious health problems. It feels kind of odd to be here again after so many years, and I wonder, has anything changed? And I tell you, many things have changed. First, we were kind of a voice in the wilderness. Nobody was that concerned about damage to the marine environment. Now there are many important public agencies that have spoken out against once-through cooling. So my sincere wish is that LS Power will really consider what is the best cooling system for their new plant. Perhaps if they are willing to listen to the community, if they're interested in environmental responsibility, they will look at the alternatives. And that's my little pitch there. I did have a question for Mr. King. Namely, it was always our understanding that if power is needed in Southern California, it cannot come from here. I may be wrong on that, but that's what I seem to hear. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Jeff O'Dell, Morro Bay resident and declared candidate for mayor. I'm here to speak to item A2. Probably everybody thought I'd talk about the power plant. I'm going to read some excerpts from a letter which I wrote to the mayor and council members on January 14th, 2002. And it was in regard to the way that we fill a vacancy when a two-year incumbent council member is successfully elected to mayor and how that seat is filled. I'll quote myself here is, I've called it a quaint custom, which is the institutionalized subversion of democracy. It supplants the constitutional ultimate power of the electors with a governmental privilege. This practice also conflicts with Morro Bay's own municipal code, which states the electors shall elect the city council. What I advised to the council in 2002 was the most expedient remedy is the codification of a stipulation which requires midterm council members to relinquish their office if they run for mayor, win or lose. I went on to state, I believe that anything which is designed to divide a community is evil. Experience teaches us that anything which unites people is worth striving for. So let us eliminate this undemocratic perversion of our electoral process once and for all. Now, I don't believe that Mr. Lemons or John Barta saw this letter, and I never communicated it to them before they began their petition drive. But I do support the idea of getting rid of the appointment of a council member to fill a seat as a result of an election. And if my memory serves me well, I don't know, Mr. Schultz can probably nod or shake his head, but I believe that when a petition is successfully gathered enough signatures and been certified, that the council has the option to adopt. And if I were up there tonight, I would suggest that you adopt the first initiative, which deals with the succession when there's a vacancy created by the election of a mayor. I have issues with the second initiative, which has to do with the primary election. We don't have a primary election occur every 2 years. So I think that their idea, although it seems noble in one respect, would actually add to our costs every so often where we'd need two elections to fill two council seats. So if I were you, I would suggest that you adopt the first initiative and put the second one on the ballot. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor and City Council, I'm Bill Newman, and I'm one of your committee members on the New Futures Committee to help you with ideas for what might happen in the future to the Morro Bay Power Plant property if any becomes available for development. Nothing to do with advocating what does happen there. We are going to have a workshop, community workshop. The idea is to get everybody that we can in town to give us their ideas on what's going to be good for such property if it becomes available. That's going to be September 30th from 11 to 3 in the community center. We want the people to have a chance to give multiple inputs. So we have a special setup, which you see over there in the community center, where it says start. We'll herd the people through there and give them a little education on what the situation is, maps of the property, and what constraints there might be. And then they go into the main room where there are five stations, each with a different topic. One of them might be visitors to Morro Bay. Another one might be business. We haven't determined those for sure. But people will be able to go to each and every one of those, and that way it'll be an efficient way to get as many ideas as we can in a short time. The input that we're going to have will be written down, or they can speak and have it written down by us, or they can put little things on the bulletin boards to give their opinion about some of the ideas that have already been expressed. So our workshop is going to be big doings, we think, but we would like to have the City Council's help on it, and that means we're going to have flyers to advertise it. We want to send them out with the water sewer bills if we can. We'd like to link to the city website. We're going to have a website of our own. We're mailing to over 100 stakeholders to give them information and invite them to this meeting. We want a city account to receive donations so we can get some help in funding it, but we would like the city to help fund also. And we think with all the flyers and newspaper ads and posters and so on, it'll take maybe $2,500. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I feel like a total big wheel and I'm scared. Good evening, everyone. My name is Ellen Jewett. I'm an artist. And can we make that a little bigger so that can anybody enlarge it? Anyways, if you can't, you can't. There's a new event in town. It is the Art Walk, and our first night is this coming Friday. Between 5 and 8, all the galleries in town will be open, serving refreshments and wine. And what I'm hoping that will happen is it'll bring more of the locals back to look at art. And I also have a very fond feeling about our business community forum that I started attending about, 2 months ago when I was sitting in the gallery at Marina Square, which is my gallery. It's a co-op. And I thought to myself, this is insane. We should have more people walking around town looking at art like we do in San Luis Obispo with Art After Dark. So I went downstairs, and sure enough, Tracy Neal, who owns, or their partner, the Seven Sisters, was having the same idea. So we just exploded. And I've been going to the meetings on Thursday morning at Rose's ever since and absolutely loving it. And gosh, I don't know what else to say except I think collaboration is the name of the game, and I would love to see as many people as possible supporting our art walk. Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor. Is it appropriate for me to discuss the tax issue
if you
now
can't be here for the rest of it? If you can be here for that discussion, it would be better to wait until then because it is a public hearing.
Okay. If I'd like to go ahead and do that if possible, if that's all right with you.
If you have to leave, yes, we would do make
okay,
that exception.
Thank you. I look at this issue as a city and individual insurance policy.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Rick Grantham, Morro Bay resident. Speaking on the issue of the tax increase, I look at this issue as a city and an individual insurance policy. You will only know how valuable this policy is until you need emergency services. You need to know that when you are in a medical emergency, be it an automobile accident or a major health event at your residence, that an experienced lifesaver with state-of-the-art equipment will arrive in a short period of time to save your life. We also need a staffed police department and need to give them a competitive salary like other communities to keep good officers here. I support the half-cent tax increase to maintain the quality of life here in Morro Bay. Also, I'd like to thank John from LS Power for coming tonight. It's nice to finally put a face on something as important as the power plant, be it as controversial as it is. I'd like to get a sense of the personality of LS Power. I know that Duke in the past, whether you liked them or not, they were involved in the community. They supported local community projects such as the Rotary Club. They were a benefactor to us in many ways and in many city events. So I'd like to get a sense of where they're at, what their history has been in other communities in which they have their power plants, and maybe some examples of things they've done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Peterson, City Council members. My name is Susan Brown, and I'm here tonight to represent MV Transportation. We're the company that's operated Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride and the trolley service in Morro Bay since 2001. We love all the people in Morro Bay, and we appreciate the ones that ride Dial-A-Ride and use it for their transportation. It's our mission to provide safe, affordable, and friendly service to everyone that rides. If anyone's tired of the high cost of gas, well, here we are. I just paid $3.48 a gallon for gas. And if you want to save money, then we'd like to encourage you to try Dial-A-Ride for your transportation inside of the city limits of Morro Bay. Our regular fare is $1.50 a ride, and the fare for seniors and for disabled passengers is $1. Dial-A-Ride's a door-to-door service, and it operates inside of the city limits. On a typical day, we take folks to the RTA connection at City Park. We take kids to school and also to Kids Club. Then we pick up some seniors. They go exercise over at the gym. And some who just want to go on their daily coffee shop get-together, we take them too. Our most popular stops are the grocery stores, and our drivers are always happy to assist anyone that needs a helping hand. And we're accessible to any kind of mobility device that will go on board. In the month of August, we're going to be having a special promotion of Dial-A-Ride, and we're going to offer prizes for our riders. So we'd really like to encourage anyone that wants to call us for a ride and ask how you can be a winner and save some money. So our number is up there at 772-2744. Thank you.
Thank you. It is a great service.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker from Los Osos, and just let me tell you, this is how we set up our room, and we no longer have a sheriff in the back of the room at our meetings in Los Osos. I want to thank you for appointing me to the New Futures North Embarcadero Waterfront Futures Committee. It's been a delight. I told you when I applied that I had been bitten by the land use bug through the sewer issue in Los Osos, and I can't tell you how much more I have enjoyed land use since I've become part of this committee. And the idea of redeveloping the property, and it's like silly putty in my hands. It feels really exciting to have the community outreach effort that Bill so eloquently expressed what our desires are to put forward towards your community. I hope you reach across the bay and invite people in Los Osos to participate in what they believe that the power plant property should one day mold into. We don't know. But we encourage that. I encourage that. I like to see that. Later in your agenda tonight, you are going to consider some seed money for our outreach effort. And he mentioned a date. I hope that date sticks, and I look forward to it, and I hope you all attend. And I support that money towards the effort, and I hope that you do the same. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, council people, persons. Michael Lucas, I'm a 5-year resident of Morro Bay. I also teach up at Cal Poly in the architecture department. I'm also a member of the New Futures Task Force, which you appointed me to, which I've enjoyed being on very much the last 2 months. We are getting to the point where the website we've been working on will become public. The meetings that we feel with the public to get their input are going to be executed, and most of those things, whether digital or our time, which is contributed, cost nothing. Some of the documents and things that we will be producing do have a cost. And as a citizen and a member of the community, I would also endorse your participation in seeding some funds for the group to produce some of these documents for the community as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Patty Dutton. I'm a member of the local Native American community, and I also want to thank you for appointing me on the New Futures Committee to ensure that the cultural resources and the Native American interests will definitely be included in that process. I'd also ask that you consider any funds that you can contribute to that so we could make sure that it gets out there to the whole community and that everybody really gets their input in, because it is for the entire community. So thank you very much for what you've done so far.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and council members. I'm Gary Rehm, a resident of Morro Bay, vice president of the Historical Society here in Morro Bay. And I just wanted to invite everyone this coming Saturday, the 15th, from 1 to 4, we're going to be having a book signing of our new book, Images of America, Morro Bay. And we did get a small write-up in the Trib yesterday, and we appreciated that. And we'll be at Carla's Country Kitchen over here on Beach Street from 1 to 4, and both authors will be there to sign the books that you purchase. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, it's Jingle Bells, and it's Christmas in July, and I'm Betty Forsyth and from the Morro Bay Friends of the Library and a resident of the city for, I used to say 10 years, but now it's 13. I'm getting old, and I'm living longer here, so that's good news. Anyway, Christmas in July, and this is one of our little Santas that we're selling, is Saturday, July 22nd from 11 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. in the program room at the library. We will have lots of Kincaid items, Santa's gift baskets, framed art, and a wonderful raffle of a Harry and David 2-foot flocked table tree with lights. So we're having everybody bring a friend and be a friend and come to this event. And remember, all the proceeds go to the purchase of books. And if you need any information, and you want to bring me down checks, buy stuff, let me know at 772-0792 and just call me. Thank you. And keep the jingle bells.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. Keith Taylor, resident of Morro Bay, friend of the Morro Bay Fire Department. We, the Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department, support the increase in the sales tax for the general fund. We would like you, the City Council, to focus on the priorities established by the surveys that were done by the fire department and the city. That is, to build a complete fire station, because safety is a top priority of our community. Then take each item on the list and don't deviate from the priorities our community has designated. And I want to thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Marla Bruton from North Morro Bay. And can I go over to the overhead?
Yeah. I don't know if we have power to that yet. AGP, do we have power on the second mic? Okay, we don't have any power on that one tonight. So you have to speak from the other side.
Okay, I'm here tonight. This was given to me by one of my neighbors, and they were afraid to come here today to talk to you about it, but they heard me on two previous occasions talking about the public not being notified when there's toxic waste cleanup proposals. This person took this off of a phone pool yesterday. When I knew that was coming to the Planning Commission, I walked over that property 5 times looking for a posting. There was none. And I know how postings sometimes end up on the ground. I mean, I searched the bushes. everything. This, can you move it over, please? The time to appeal the Planning Commission's decision to approve that was the 29th of June. The meeting was the 19th, I guess. So you had 10 days. And then you had 10 days after that to appeal to the City Council. Well, this was found on a poll on July 9th, which is 10 days after that appeal time. Just for the people at home, this is the on Main Street, and those four little rectangles in the front are the little white bungalows that sit. You have Del Mar Park is immediately behind there. These are the little bungalows that sit on highway on Main Street, and then you have the creek right next to it. I'm not against cleaning up toxic waste, but I do believe that the people need to be informed that it's being done. And also, I'd like Mr. Boucher, the next time he's here, to bring in his plan development showing a plan for 180 units, residential units, on that property. Because I think that the people here need to know, because that's just at traffic congestion, I don't know who's thinking what, but it's not right. And I would really like to request that he bring the plan development maps. I've seen, and he has 180 there, 120 off Zanzibar, where the tanks are, and something like 200 at the 4000 Highway 1 Chevron Marine Terminal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, Council, staff, friends, and friends at home. I'm Joey Ricano with the Ocean Outfall Group, and I'm here tonight to remind you about the upcoming Talk About the Bay meeting, which will be coming up on September 2nd right here in this room. It's the TAB meeting, Talk About the Bay. It's co-hosted by Surf Rider Foundation and the Sierra Club, as well as our Ocean Outfall Group, and EcoSlow will be voting on it this Wednesday. And we look forward to their participation. And Henrietta, could you just wait 1 second, please? Because you're distracting me. And so, however, so what's happening is we've had some excellent developments, and those developments are as follows. Unfortunately, talking about planning, Sarah Christie will be out of the state, but we got the next best thing, and that's the executive director at a coastal commission, Peter Douglas, will be doing that. And then we've got Haiti DeBritz from UC Davis doing the Toxoplasma gondii findings and a historic survey. Then we've also been lucky enough, you know, there's a meeting the next month about the bay, and that is the State of the Bay with the National Estuary Program. So we've been fortunate to steal for a short time away from them. We've got Dan Berman, who's going to open up our show with an overall look at both bays, Estero and Morro. Now, you may or may not know that Estero Bay and Morro Bay, though they're right next to each other, they're very different from each other, completely different. So this is going to be really interesting. And then our keynote speaker will be Ocean Protection Council and Assembly Member Pedro Nava. So that's September 2nd. That's right here. AGP is going to be doing the video. It's going to be Bob Shanbrom is going to be doing vegan catering, and it should be really fun. And finally, Christine Mulholland will be our celebrity MC. So everybody come on down and let's talk about the bay. And thank you for this opportunity to address you tonight.
Thank you.
Noon to 5.
My name is Beverly Polakoff, and I live in Culver City. However, every 6 to 8 weeks, I come up to Morro Bay for 5, 6, 7 days. I hate to go back. And everyone says when I get back how wonderful I look. You must have been to Morro Bay. Everyone knows. And I really love the city. I think you've done a fantastic job of running this city. I'm 76 years old, and I'm not ready to retire, but when I retire, I'm coming to live up here permanently. So I want you to know I love this city. However, there is one issue that really upsets me, and that is the secondhand smoke in the Otter Rock Cafe. I have spoken to members of the administration here, the mayor. I've spoken to people, administrators in SLO. Everyone knows that there is secondhand smoke there, and nobody seems to know what to do about it. Well, I'm Jewish, and I grew up with the idea from Hillel the Elder that if not me, who? If not now, when? So I am writing up an ordinance that will be statewide to be presented to my assemblywoman, Karen Bass, who's a friend, to introduce in the state legislature, which will prohibit secondhand smoke in restaurants in California, and that there must be a non-porous divider between the smoking and non-smoking areas. Right now, of course, the law only applies to the people who work in restaurants. This will apply to all the restaurants in the state. Now, it's going to take me a while to get it through the legislature, but secondhand smoke is very dangerous. It kills people. And I don't understand why the police department, I've talked to the police department, I've talked to everyone that I could think of, and everyone knows. And yet no one seems to know what to do about it. I realize there's some there must be politics going on in it that I'm not aware of, but I love Morro Bay. I love to eat at the Otter Rock Cafe. I ate there 3 times and coughed before I said to myself, what are you doing? Stop eating there. And a lot of people say they don't eat there anymore. I don't understand why the council has not taken... There has to be some thinking outside the box, but because it doesn't seem to be happening, I am going to be writing an ordinance. Also, it's going to have an 800 number, so that if people want to complain, here's where you call. It will have to be posted in all the restaurants. But I thought I'd let you know. I don't know how fast it's going to move. But because I love this city, I really wish someone would take action on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Good evening, Council, staff, Ken Vesterfeld, resident of Morro Bay. A couple items here. On August the 5th, at Albertson's parking lot, there's going to be a small gasoline antique car or show there. And on August the 6th, they've been invited to come to the Merchants Fair, and they'll be down on Morro Bay Boulevard there. So come on out there and take a look. It's going to be quite interesting. If it's successful, we're going to be able to bring them back again. On the Half Cents Tail Sacks initiative, I feel it's very, very important for the city of Morro Bay. I think the part is going to be the educating to the public of all the facts and why it's needed. We have to go through the negativity sometimes of what some people think immediately when they hear of a tax increase. It's like, no, absolutely not. But I think it's going to be very important here to the city of Morro Bay. So hopefully we'll be able to get that information out. On the other initiatives, I'm for both of those initiatives. One is to give the right for the people of Morro Bay to choose who they would like to see there at council. Yes, there may be some additional costs, but no, that's part of what we have the right to do. We have the right to run for anything that we want to, and we have the right for the people to choose those people that they have chosen. So I think it's very beneficial to the city of Morro Bay also. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Barta, and as I'm sure you can guess, I'm here to talk briefly about item A2. I wanted to share with you some of the information that I gathered. It's really an experience, you know, standing out there asking for signatures from hundreds of people. But here's the bottom line on these things. They're very popular with anybody that would stop to talk about them. I'm sure at least 95% of the people that stopped to talk about it signed it. And so it was universally supported throughout the community. We, of course, checked the signatures. Well, we didn't see the actual signatures, but we checked the names to make sure they were registered before we turned them in. And what we found was that it completely cuts across all partisan lines. I mean, this has support across the board from Democrats, Republicans, Greens, decline to states, you name it. Everybody likes this thing. I'm looking forward to it being on the ballot, and I'm looking forward to what happens in the fall. I'm sure it's going to be a successful campaign. I'm normally very shy about saying something like that, but I'm really confident about this. It's the right thing to do in both cases. And there's, Jeff has a sense of it, and he's a little more concerned about the second one on the primary, but the support for that was less than 2% less than the other one. So it was like 788 signatures versus 801 good signatures. So it was a very tiny difference between the two. Both very well supported. I would caution that if you attempt to enact one of these tonight, that you give yourself some flexibility on that, because I'd hate to see you get in a position of enacting it tonight and then finding out that there was some legal problem with having done that. I believe the choice of election dates, which is the second initiative, was initially enacted by the people when the city was founded, and so it might be that that one has to go on the ballot. I'm not sure, but your able counsel can do that. I'd also like to thank the city and the county for how they handled this thing. There's the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, and when we brought these signatures to the city and the city and turned to the county, everybody was very helpful in getting the job done and expeditiously and done well. And so I want to thank everybody in that regard too. So thank you very much.
Bridget specifically. Thank you.
Good evening, council members. My name is Brian Starr. I'm an architect with Studio Design Group in San Luis Obispo. And I have a question related to item C. Is there going to be a public comment period associated with that, or should we address this issue?
No, there will not. This is the time.
Okay. Regarding that, I am a partner in the potential purchasers for the property at where San Luis Paints is presently located. And our intention was to develop that four lots as four new residences there. And in the course of our design, this issue came up with regard to the moratorium and even a restriction on the property that I want to talk about. But I have to assume that an emergency moratorium doesn't require legal notification. Is that correct? None of the property owners have been noticed about this meeting tonight?
Correct.
Okay. Part of the information that we were faxed this afternoon, the city attorney stated that a recently passed amendment to your ordinances would prohibit residential development on this property. And I have a question regarding that. We've met members of our, the buyers have met with the planning department numerous times, and there's never been any indication that residential housing would not be allowed on this property. Separate from tonight's discussion about the moratorium, what we're being told by the city attorney at 4:30 this afternoon is that housing's not allowed on this property anyway. And in numerous inquiries to the city planning department, this has never been mentioned. So it's kind of curious, and the question still stands. The other question that raises is, why would a moratorium be needed if residential development's not allowed on this property in the first place? So in the rush to adopt an emergency moratorium, there's a lot of questions here, and it's unclear why this is an emergency, which brings me to my third point, which is the resolution that you're considering tonight states that this is a possible threat to public health, safety, and welfare. And that seems like quite a stretch. I don't know how the construction of residential homes approved in an R4 mixed-use district would be a threat to public health, safety, and welfare. And my question is how you would make that finding. What is the threat? I mean, you can use that term, but to actually identify how that threatens your community is the finding that would have to be made to support the moratorium. And lastly, before this information all came up, so far to date, the partners have invested $20,000 in the property with soils investigation and such. And again, numerous inquiries to the planning department have never indicated there would be any problem with construction of homes on that property. And just the rush for this whole moratorium and the finding that suddenly building homes is a threat to public health, safety, and welfare is really puzzling and adds to the confusion of an emergency situation.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is George Shamus. I'm a real estate broker representing Lee Cronin, who is the daughter of the founder of St. Louis Paints. And we are in escrow. We've been in escrow on that property for 90 days. And as Brian Starr said, that nothing negative has surfaced with regard to developing those lots. I'm here on Lee Cronin's behalf. She intended to be here. Just today, she told me that this weekend, her mother was diagnosed with brain cancer, so she apologized for not being here. But St. Louis Paints has been in Morro Bay for 26 years, rendering very good service to the community. And we have moved forward. She has passed through $12,000 to the Denny's owners, non-refundable. So she will lose that money if her property isn't sold and developed with four single-family homes. And then they are moving forward with architectural plans. She has renderings already for the Denny's property. So it just seems to me that this is a win-win situation for the city of Morro Bay, as well as the Denny's property, and for the four lots there that are on the north end of Main Street, where commercial property has had a very difficult time. So I'm just here on Lee Cronin's behalf to ask your consideration to allow her to sell those properties to David McCoy, who engaged Brian Starr's firm's Studio Design Group, so that they can move forward with these plans to develop two properties in Morro Bay that really need beg to be redeveloped. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there anyone else want to speak after this person? Because I want to cut this off at 7:30. Okay, so that's it then. Just two. Okay.
Good evening. My name is Ken James. I'm a property owner here in Morro Bay. And I was watching the proceedings on television, and I just had to come down and respond to a particular individual that was speaking in regards to the Outer Rock. I am not a smoker. However, I also realize that these people that go to the Outer Rock go there with the idea that they can go there, making the choice to go or not to go. And this individual from Culver City, who established the rule for everyone else, I suppose, has the right to not patronize that particular establishment. And I think that the fact is that there are many, many people who come to this town, to visit this town, and who are tourists in this town, have the right to go to an establishment which they feel comfortable in. And she has the right to not go to that particular establishment. And I think that our rights are being people's rights. And I said, I'm not a smoker, but I know that there are vociferous people who make their wishes known, and because people don't stand up to them, are creating problems for other normal people. People should have the right to go where they want or not go where they want. And that's my thought in regards to this Otter Rock situation. I think that it's a place that people can enjoy, and if she does not wish to enjoy, do not participate and do not patronize the establishment. So I hope that you look at that in view of people's rights and other people's rights not to impose their views on others. And this is coming from a non-smoker. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mayor, members of the council, my name is Rick Sauerwine. I look forward to the day of being a neighbor of Morro Bay soon. Right now, I'm a member of the New Futures Committee, and I am enjoying that activity. I think it's important to point out that every member of that committee is making a very significant investment in their personal time, and I myself have had occasion to make no less than 5 trips from my office in Camarillo during the week to come up here and participate in what I think will probably be one of the most significant events that the city of Morro Bay will experience in the next 50 years. That investment that each of us are making, I think, is small in comparison to the magnitude of the impact upon the city from the work that will be done. And I just hope that the City Council will make a similar investment and support the upcoming event. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll bring it back to the Council. And anybody have any comments? The one thing I had, Otter Rock, it seems to me that it, because it's open air, that's why it's not non-smoking enforceable. Is that correct? I remember when it was first opened, because they only have canvas ceilings and there's air coming in, that it's not a no-smoking establishment. Do either of you, John or Mike, remember that?
My recollection is when it was first built, that was considered a public way.
Yeah.
The back side of the Otter Rock and not an actual interior portion of the restaurant.
All right. Okay. Other comments on comments? Melody?
Yeah, I was wondering if Mr. Ambo, if you could comment on the Texaco property, any plans that you know about for building subdivisions and such?
I would need to double check, but I'm not aware of anything, any proposal for development of the magnitude that the speaker indicated. What it could be is we may have in some of our plans and studies, for example, the sewer master plan or the water management plan, we may have estimated a build-out for that, and you know, like a 20-year mm-hmm. build-out. So we could have assigned a density in a certain...
The comments about the San Luis Paints and all, or would you like to talk to them?
I can do that now, or I can do it when you address this issue later on tonight.
Okay. All right. We'll wait until then. Okay, Mr. King, would you like to come back and respond?
Well, I believe David Hicks wrote down the 2 questions, and we'll see if I got them right, or if he got them right. The first was the question as to whether power can be transferred from Morro Bay to Southern California was, I believe, the first question. And the answer, I mean, I don't pretend to understand transmission power flows, but the answer is that it's very congested right now, and it's not very likely that you could service Southern California with power out of this facility. What I was making reference to is there's a lot of transmission projects in the state, and there's a lot of upgrades that are being proposed to the transmission system to make it easier to transfer power from Northern California to Southern California and back and forth. The Path 15 upgrade, which took place, made it easier to move power from the central part of California to Northern California. And it's one of the objectives of the California ISO over time to increase the transfer limits. So the answer is currently no, it's not very likely. But over time, as the transmission system does get upgraded and built out, there's a greater probability that you could transfer power more freely to Southern California. The second one, the gentleman asked, I think he was looking for a sense of Ellis Power's history and community involvement and personality. And I've been with Ellis Power only since December. So I can't give you a lot of specific examples, but the issue came up as part of our planning as we took over the Duke portfolio. And Randy and I both had that question, and we've talked to our senior management in New York about it. And the philosophy of the company, which I think is a very good, reasonable approach, is that community involvement, charitable contributions, support for local institutions, really is driven through our power plant employees. And they're the ones who live in the community, who organizations that were previously being supported by the Morro Bay Power Facility. That is probably it. We're not very large. Sorry for any politicians or future politicians. We're not really, the company doesn't like to give a lot of political contributions. We prefer to focus on community efforts. So
that's fair.
I hope that answers those two questions.
Thank you very much, and thank you for being here tonight. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. I was happy to do
okay.
it.
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks. All right, Council. I know that we have a couple of people waiting on consent agenda items. If you tell me which ones you want to pull, and maybe some of those that people are waiting on aren't going to be pulled, we can at least do that before we go to our public hearing. So who wants to pull anything on consent?
I would pull A3, 6, and 7.
Anybody else? Okay, then can I hear a motion approving A1, 2, 4, 5, and 8?
So move.
So, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, there you go. All right, let's take a short break, and then we'll start our public hearing.
You didn't want to deal with it?
Please come to attention, and we will begin again. The party in the back by the door, if you could tarry your conversation outside, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go to our public hearing item, which is our long-anticipated tax initiative resolution. Ordering placement on the ballot of a sales tax initiative measure. And Rob, is this you or Bob?
Yes, Madam Mayor, I'll start out, and okay. I believe Rob has some comments too.
All right.
Let me start by saying that this item contains a resolution and an ordinance for you to consider. We're hoping tonight that you'll adopt the resolution, which would direct its placement on the November ballot. Our recommendation is that you discuss and take public testimony regarding the resolution and adopt it. Also, the city attorney has additional advice as to process related to this item, which we'll be coming back to at future meetings. The two most recent budget that the city has had have been extremely resource restricted, and as a result, services have been reduced and staff eliminated from budgets. In response, the City Council directed staff to identify alternatives for generating additional future revenue and to address these service needs. As of December of 2005, staff presented the City Council the consideration of a revenue ballot measure to assist the city in funding current services and priority service goals unattainable with current revenue levels. A key element of this effort was polling registered voter attitudes. The findings indicated that the city residents may support a half-cent local sales tax option. A half-cent tax increase would generate an additional $700,000 approximately annually. And as a result, staff was directed to proceed with efforts aimed at proposing a sales tax measure and present the findings to the City Council for consideration. That's what this document does tonight. The advantages of a sales tax measure are very quickly that it will generate revenue to address currently unfunded city priorities. Other jurisdictions in the county are also considering similar measures, and the timing provides an opportunity to coordinate in a countywide effort on this policy. Existing sales tax rate is currently lower than that paid by most residents in California. It would minimize the burden on jurisdiction, and we can find, based on the experience of other cities that have enacted such an increase, that there appears to be no effect on in-city sales as a result of adopting a measure that changes the rate within the city to make it a different rate than that which is outside the city. And I believe I'll leave it at that. There are alternatives to the general sales tax measure. They would be a special tax under the provisions of Proposition 18 requiring a two-thirds vote of the electorate. Again, the draft ordinance and resolution is before you, and I'd be happy to try and answer any questions. It's our recommendation that you adopt the resolution directing its placement on the ballot.
Okay. And Rob,
you this afternoon, I proposed changes to Resolution 3306, and really there was the only changes was there were some whereases that were added to the beginning of them that kind of told about our financial condition, and those were proposed by our consultant. So that's the only change I want to tell you about that was made to the resolution. It doesn't affect, you know, anything legally. The other thing I want to tell you about is that I had a conversation with the Board of Equalization today about the revenue and tax code, and they have an interesting legal department in that the tax code, they say, requires us to adopt the ordinance even before the election, which seems crazy to me. And I've never done that before in as long as I've been practicing, but they say that tax code, in fact, that we cite, if you really want to know the explanation, the tax code 7285.9, which is what we are going by, which is the general sales tax, does not require the adoption of it, but when it's used for special tax, which is 7285.91, that does require the adoption of. So the legal department has said, even though it's in one code and not the other, we require the jurisdiction to adopt it by ordinance beforehand. So instead of fighting that, and I've talked to the other Central Coast cities, they all are going to adopt it, and other cities just do it. So what that means is we will have a first and second reading on this ordinance in August, which is fine. You still can pass the resolution, and we'll have that. We'll adopt it. It will not be effective, though, unless we receive the 50 plus one vote at the election in November. So a little
interesting,
a little quirk there that came about just today through various emails through the different cities that are trying to work on this together. So
they were surprised by this too, or had some of
yes.
them already done that?
No, okay. Everybody was surprised by this, okay. and they've seen our ordinance, and if in fact this goes forward, mm-hmm. and then we'll be set for the election in November.
Okay. Any questions of staff? Melody?
Yeah, I have one. For Mr. Hendricks, when you talked on the background section, a key element of this effort was polling registered voter attitudes. I'm wondering, you refer to it again on the second page here under alternatives involved in drafting a sales tax measure. You say, as can be seen by the survey. And I don't know what survey that is under the special tax, where you say, and I'll start with that one on page 3, as can be seen by the survey, the number of general tax measures is very close to the number of special tax measures passed. And those are two separate surveys, I think, right? One is probably one provided by the consultant. And
where are you looking again? I just make sure I'm
on, page,
on the same
well,
page.
Well, two different things, but I think they're two different surveys now that I really look. On page 3, alternatives involved in drafting a sales tax measure, and you refer to a survey. As can be seen by the survey, the number of general tax measures is very close to the number of special tax measures passed. So I'm wondering what the source of that was. Was that?
I'm not finding that.
Is that another part of your amendment? Because I thought I caught all of them.
Oh, there it is. Okay. As can be seen by the survey, the number of special tax measures passed. That's not a comment about our survey. That's a comment generally statewide. It's information supplied by our consultant. I'm sorry.
Okay. So whether it's a general or a specific, it's pretty close on
the numbers passage. Of measures that have been proposed are pretty close.
Okay. Yeah. And the thing I was first curious about, more curious about, was Under background on the first page. Second paragraph there where you say a key element of this effort was polling registered voter attitudes and saying that the findings indicated that city residents may support a half-cent local option sales tax measure. I assume that's the phone survey that we did a few months ago.
That's right.
And we saw, I think it was about a 57%.
It was over 50%. I don't remember the exact percentage.
I think it was around 57% approvals. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, this is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this issue, please come forward.
Good evening.
Anyone else? No. Oh, this one.
Madam Mayor and Council, Jeff O'Dell, Moore Bay resident. I have discussed the survey and the proposed tax with a lot of coworkers and acquaintances, people around town, and I know that it would complicate the process and that it would require a two-thirds majority vote. But the thing that I have heard as a consistent comment about this is that it seems a little general, a little broad. And I think that the consensus, the postmortem on the Cuesta initiative was that it was just broad. And people, I was astounded that the Cuesta bond or Cuesta tax did not pass, but it was because everybody looked at it and just they wanted to see something more specific. Now, I've heard the talk given by the chief of police and the fire chief, so I think that I have a pretty good handle on my mind. You know, what we're talking about here. But some people had misgivings about that there's going to be an advisory committee that's going to make a decision, after the fact on exactly what this is going to be spent on. So I, as a suggestion, everybody has said that if they knew exactly what this money was going to go for, that they would have no problem supporting it. And I, again, you take the risk of needing the 60% of the voters to cover it. But I just wanted to pass that along. And that's a sense that if we want this to succeed, maybe we might think of it as more specific as to exactly what the money's going to go for. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. We'll bring it back to council. Who wants to start? Thad?
Well, we've been working on this for a number of months, and I personally want to thank the police chief and the fire chief for all the work they've done the last 3-4 months and seeing that the word got out, and Mayor yourself. I think it should be put on the ballot. I am content that since we do have a citizens oversight committee, and I looked at this several times, it's the last part of the ordinance, and it's obvious to me that even though they only are required,
heard in the survey originally, the amount of money that this will raise, if we're lucky that it's the $700,000 or $70,000 annually, is not a lot of money.
$700,000,
thank you. It's not a lot of money compared to what we need. And so Mr. O'Dell's comments kind of ring true for me then in that if we were more specific about this money, I think people would be more excited about it. You say tax, everybody says no. If you say we need this fire truck, we need a code enforcer, we need an after-school program, that's something specific they can hang their hat on. I know that we need the tax. I know that we need the money. I think that this oversight committee that meets once a year as a review of what has happened 6 months prior isn't the kind of committee I don't think the citizens were referring to when they made that suggestion or said that they didn't trust the city council and therefore they would need some kind of oversight to do the budget. So I'm not comfortable with the nature of the committee as it's structured right now or their intent. It's more of a
almost a rubber stamp to me, or, well, this is what did happen, but then how do you fix it? It's after the fact too much. So I'm not real comfortable with it. So I guess what I'm saying is that I'm in favor of doing a special tax. I would be willing. I know that we need the money. I think if we could identify some specific issues that would address people's needs. They have concerns of what it will go for, and we know that that's our concern, the community's concern. And so I think if we could be a little bit more direct with this, since this doesn't have to be passed tonight, that we could make that kind of finding and pass it at the next meeting. I would even be willing to meet for a second time in July to iron out some of these concerns. Bill?
Well, we have to, if we go with the simple majority, 50% plus one, we can't be specific. Right. That's the problem. And I think that we've tried very hard to show our intent. We just couldn't be that specific. And I know we just heard a speaker say that there are some members of the public that are concerned about an advisory committee. Well, this is not an advisory committee. We're talking about it's an oversight committee, which will critique what has been done to ensure that the biggest, personally, I'm concerned that if we go for the very specific and go for the two-thirds, if we don't quite make it, I think it would be close, but I think it's more of a gamble, and I don't know if we can afford the gamble. That's my problem. I think that we see a way here to bring our fire department up to the staffing we should have so we have the response times and to get a fire station. So, you know, we're probably the only, well, probably the only fire department in California in a circus tent, but it's time to get past all of that, and I think this is one way to try.
Melody?
Well, I have concerns about the committee. When I read what they're supposed to do, they're supposed to, no later than the last day of the 6 month, following the end of the city fiscal year, the committee will present its findings and conclusions to the city council for its review. And actually, I thought that was the job of the finance director. I thought that's the thing that was called the mid-year budget review. I would want this to have more teeth. I'd want them to be able to say, as has been alluded to at least, that there was X, 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 and you did or did not do this, or you did or did not do that. If you say that you're going to build your reserves and you didn't do it. And, you know, I want them to be independent and, frankly, kind of rowdy. I mean, I'm also concerned about, this doesn't say how long the appointment is to this. Shall have 5 citizen members appointed by the city council. So we take the group that citizens have identified that, well, we got kind of a low rating, as you recall, about their trust levels and such. And then we have 5 citizen members appointed by the very group that the community's worried about. And so, I'd like to put the 3 amigos on as the first 3 and then whoever else. But so I had those concerns about that. Now, as to whether or not there should be a special or general tax, first of all, while I would like to have a special tax that restricts the revenue, because I think that people, as Ms. Winholz was saying, will respond more emotionally to that if I say that if you vote for this tax, I promise you that the money will go only to facilities for the fire department and infrastructure upgrades, because both of those are facing people. Those are both very personal hits with people. One is my sewer bill, which I'm hearing the rates are going to go up, and the second one is my safety. Should I have oversight by a committee that we've appointed? I don't know that. I actually worry whether that'll get the 50%, because we had 57%, and everything I've been hearing on the street is that the support has been eroding over the months. So I would favor a special one that really pointed to fire and infrastructure. And failing that, I would obviously support the other one, because I, in general, believe that people need to face the fact that taxes must go up when you're asking for the services that you ask for, because benefits and pay, you know, our personnel costs are going up anyway. So if you want the services, you've got to pay. So I would support either. But I would certainly be talking a lot about a special tax as probably more supportable, more visual.
Can okay. I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Melody brought up an interesting point. Now, even as a general tax, we have outlined examples, but the one point that was brought up was the reserve. Am I wrong in assuming that this money coming in from this specific tax could not just be put in the reserve because we've said it will be used for purposes? Is that correct? Anybody want to jump in on that?
Well, it depends on the nature of the question you're asking. If you're talking about technically, this is the nature of this measure is that it's a general fund measure. So the revenue that would be coming into the general fund from this would be general revenue. So it's not legally restricted in any particular way. What is proposed here, though, is to track this money separately from the other sales tax revenue that we would get, so that it's possible to demonstrate at the end of the day what the money was actually spent on. Does that help at all? There is no legal bar.
Understood. But I think I'm referring to the commitment we have set up here and made when this thing started to the community, and that was to build up the infrastructure and the public safety issues that we've had. And while it would be laudable to build up the reserve, but I don't see this money going for that.
Well, I think the council, frankly, as a group, has stated its priorities loud and clear for months now for the community to hear. But that's not the kind of thing that would cause this to be a special purpose tax. And frankly, to use the money for a specific purpose. If the measure were written in a way that did limit you in that way so that it passed and you were required to use it for a special purpose, whatever the purpose was, it would require 2/3 vote in order to pass.
Can I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. I've probably been working on this a little longer than the rest of you just because the mayor's meetings have been discussing this for the past over a year. This is something that all of the cities except Paso Robles, and the Paso Robles mayor said just Friday, you know, I can't justify it to my community. We have too much money. So that is the reason they're not, the primary reason they're not going for it. All of the other communities are suffering the same situation that we are. It is, I think, very important that we are all going at this together as a county with the awareness that we're all suffering the same shortages. I know that there's a problem with trust in our community. Now, and I know the rest of you haven't had a chance yet, but I've read all the cards that have come back so far. And we have targeted the things that people are most concerned about. The fire department certainly is number one. Our code enforcement officer is someone that's missed. The parks and rec situation that's been noticed by a lot of people, the degrading and the care for our recreation and parks. The storm drains rate's very high. People are very concerned about what we're putting into the ocean. And I think that we've already found the things that are important. Anybody who has watched us go through our budget process knows how difficult it has been to fund those things that we know are important to our community. And at some point, you got to trust your elected officials. And if you don't trust them, then don't elect them. That is your, as a community, that is your biggest and strongest weapon against misspent money is who you elect and how they act when in office. I like the idea, and I like the idea of each of us who are either here or running for election promising, just doing a pledge, that I will spend this money according to the direction from the surveys and the input we have from the public, and will not spend it any other way. And I'm perfectly willing to do that, and I would be happy to do that. And I think that that is the kind of pledge that all of us have to make to the community. And I think the community has to believe that we're going to. And the other thing that I really like about this, there was a question at one of the business meetings about what's Plan B. Well, Plan B would be an assessment district for the fire department, an assessment district for the streets and roads. That doesn't get our tourists to contribute anything. This way, we have a contribution, a large contribution from our tourists, into this fund. And it also puts us equal with, I believe this is probably going to pass in the other cities as well. I think we're all well aware of the needs. And I think that at some point, this community has got to trust the people they elected to do what you elected us to do. So I think we can go ahead with this on a general tax, and that's what I would like to see us do.
Mayor? May I make a comment?
Yes.
I'm not going to comment on the difference between the general and the special. That is an issue for you to decide. But the concern regarding the oversight committee, to me, is an issue that we can work on through the year. You were able to adopt bylaws. I wrote this very general, meeting at least once a year. That doesn't mean your bylaws can't say once every month. With regards to how they're picked, I left it. It's up to you. You can do that just like you do other advisory once a year, or you could do it for a four-year term, or each council member could select a single person. I left that up to you to do if it does pass. So the committee, to me, is going to be selected by you, of course. I don't think there's any way other way you could do it. I don't think you'd want to have another election for this board. So I don't think that's really a choice. But I left it vague, allowing you the opportunity to develop bylaws just like you do for every other advisory oversight that allow you how they pick, how they operate, exactly what you want them to do, and what their findings would be. So I think that issue can be addressed separate apart from whether you believe it should be a special or a general.
I appreciate that comment because I think one of the ways to get at this is then to strengthen the authority of this committee, to not just to make it an advisory body then to the chief financial officer. But right now, the way it's written so generally, there's not anything. It's just a review of a budget. You know, there's no authority. There's no saying that they'll have input other than to us. There's no work involved. It's too general for me. One down and the sixth one down. I'm sorry, but this language disturbs me, and it's overly dramatic. They use the term dramatic. I don't think that on number eight we've had no choice among whether or not to use reserves. We did choose to use reserves. We have had reductions in our infrastructure, but to say that our parks are only taken care of infrequently is not true. So I have trouble with exaggerating or making generalities just to get this thing passed and hope people read it and get scared. It bothers me. So I'm saying again that I'm still for that I know that we need the money. I know we could use a tax, but I would suggest something as a special tax and strengthen the committee.
Okay, in response to that, it was another thing that I meant to say. If you have a special tax and you say, okay, it's only for street infrastructure and the fire department, for instance, the two top things, then what happens when you have resolved those problems and you have taken care of a lot of those needs and you still have really strong needs in your sewer lines and things like that? That means that, okay, this money forever can only be used for those two items. Those things may change.
Not with salaries going up, not with new equipment constantly being needed, not with adding of new development in town. We'll always need streets repaired.
But you've limited yourself.
This will just be a drop. $700,000 will only pay for maybe, you know, half employees that he's going to need for the new fire station. And then maybe a few holes. It's not even going to be enough to pave a street for a mile.
Well, we don't know that it won't go up, too, you know, as things develop within the community and the sales tax increases. And you're limiting the use of those funds to just those two things.
But
and
what
that
you would
could
do is
really tie you at a future date.
No, you play the numbers game, and you decrease those budgets based on other monies and increase others. I mean, it's just a game.
Could I just jump in here for just a second?
Sure.
And that is to say that $700,000 is a drop in the bucket. And if you think that commercial is going to be king in this town and we're going to make lots of money, I'll double it for you. I'll say $1.5 billion in sales tax, which is unbelievable raised from this. But let's say even that, I've got $25 million I got to find for the wastewater treatment plant. I've got this upgrade to all the wastewater I mean, all that stuff is just scary as all get out. I don't remember how many millions of dollars this stuff, okay? I mean, and I saw you with the big batch of cards the other day. More has come in to add to this. Yeah. Unless staff will prepare something for me that is more comprehensible, I can look at this once, but to include comments like thank you, I mean, I want this sort of cleaned up. And the other thing, too, is there are people in here who are angry about the way we spend money, and there are people who want us to spend more money. I mean, there's people who want it all on the fire, all on the police, none on the police, none on the fire. Well, nobody says none. But anyway, into the library, I mean, it's just like, it's everywhere. It's all over the place. How do you say, I'm going to pledge to keep track of these? You can't. You can't read it.
I was referring to the tallies rather than the comments. No, you. There's
well,
no
the tallies like these here. Yeah. Well, yeah, and the number one is the firefighters.
And we have those also from
but,
the cards.
There was something just right there. Ah, oh, come back to it.
Madam Mayor, we've had a lot of comment. Are we ready for a motion?
I'm ready.
I'm ready. I move that we adopt Resolution 33-06.
Second.
Further discussion.
I'd like to make a comment. Okay. The idea of beefing up the committee, we can only go so far with that. They can't overrule the council. They can't tell the finance director not to spend money. All they can do is come back and advise us that we're getting off track. That's the most a committee can do, short of having a committee become a layer of government that we're not allowed to have, probably under the being a general law city. So the bottom line is the committee can be what we make it, but it still has to come back and tell us what it is we're doing right or wrong. As far as all of those individual comments, you can't try to run this or any other part of the city based on each one of those individual comments. There are some very good ones. There are some ones that are not quite as good, and there are some from people who just don't quite understand. So all you can do is take the tallies. You can sit here knowing what needs to be done because we've done our homework with the idea that we're trying to do this in the name of those people and go ahead and do it. And that's where we are.
Melody, did you think of it?
Yeah, just a couple of comments on this motion. I would just say that if you're going to go for this general tax, and I would second what you just said, and that is that the power the people have is in the election, and we do have an election this year. And if you're PO'd at the council about the way they spend money, then you need to pay attention and vote for somebody that you think will spend the money any better. The other thing, too, about strengthen that 6 month and tell us how idiotic we've been, how stupid we've been, ill-advised we've been, or whatever, or how wonderful we've been, and not fear being replaced by the next council or the next council. So I would just look for longevity in the council. I would still also say I'm not seeing the support for it, but I think when people can visualize what they're getting, they're more likely to vote for initiatives. This one, a general one, go for it. You must be feeling a little squeamish about your public, though, to go for it for 50% plus one.
Well, I would say here, too, and I understand your concerns. I also think that it would be very wise of us as a council to support this unanimously. It is important to say this to the community that we know we need this money. We may not disagree on how it should be presented, but we all know that we need the money. And I think it does send a message to the community. If we have a split vote on this, then they don't quite know what we want. I think we really should be united on this. And that's all I have to say on that.
Well, I disagree a little bit. I think we haven't engaged in a discussion of why you feel the 50% is better than the two-thirds, or Mr. Baxley or Mr. Pierce. I'd like to hear that. I need to be convinced that this is the better way to go. Because I think the reason I'm going for the two-thirds, because I think that has a better chance. That's why I'm committed to saying that tonight and speaking against what appears to be the majority, is that I think that's what's going to pass. I don't think the general will pass. So I'm here fighting for the tax at a higher rate.
Well, one of my concerns is that when you do look at the tallies of all of the things that are important, people aren't in agreement. There are some people that think recreation and parks is much more important than the fire department. And so if you eliminate some of those from it, then you're not satisfying the people that think that money should be spent in those ways. If you include all the things that we're short on and that we have cut back on and people are seeing the difference in, and recreation parks is certainly one of the things where they're seeing the difference with the after-school programs, with the park maintenance. They're seeing the difference, and they don't like it. So if you eliminate some of those things, the services that are important to some people, then you eliminate the support from those people for the tax.
Except that some items come out extremely high, and the others are kind of at the same level. I think those, when you pick on those that are by the most, that's where you can get the most votes. I know that people want more money for the library, but that's not most people. That's some management system. And I just wanted to ask Mr. Pond, it seems to me that the one area that the state differs from the federal government is on that one issue of intelligence and information gathering. And yet you say that can kind of be incorporated in maybe a way we currently do it. We have that choice, and we'll probably continue as we are. How are you thinking about that?
Thank you. We will continue utilizing the standardized emergency management system as it integrates with the national incident management system. And that's a requirement of both the state and federal government. When we look at that intelligence component of NIMS, it is something that will be identified within our system and utilized when necessary. Oftentimes, that's a component that's not utilized in today's incident command systems, but it'll definitely be a component that, if we choose to use it, it'll be there.
Okay. That makes me feel better. Was there one more question? Oh, the training. On that same page is where I am on that page 5. Is there... with the NIMS, is there going to be more training required, and are we going to be required to pay for it, or will the federal government pay for that?
There's no funding from the federal government whatsoever. This is going to fold right into the annual training that we already do. We've been doing the standardized emergency management training and ICS with the city employees for a number of years. We started talking about NIMS almost a year and a half or 2 years ago when we did our council administration presentation. We touched on NIMS in that discussion as well. In our future training that we do with the city employees, we're going to just fold that NIMS component into it. It's so close to identical to what we already do, you probably wouldn't notice a difference.
Okay.
There's also, we mandate it in the fire department, and we would like other employees in the city to do it as well, and that's go to that FEMA website and take the 700 series and the 800 series course on NIMS, and you'll get a certificate, and that provides a compliance as well. Both those classes are fairly short. You can do those in about an hour each, and they're free.
Thanks. Thank you. I would move passage of A3.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, and then A6, Biddy.
Is that a different money, or is that the same money you're referring to?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. In the background report, we reported that we received $192,000 in rental revenues, and we expended approximately $180,000 on the project. I guess I'd ask for further clarification on what your question was exactly.
On your physical impact paragraph.
Okay. Physical impact.
Okay. The last sentence says the EIR work is being funded through the revenues received from the operator, Associated Pacific, and some initial funding from the Harbor Fund.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Is that two different? Is that the same thing? Or?
So your question is possibly what were the initial funding from the Harbor Fund?
Yeah.
Yes, I believe in 1999 or 2000, possibly 2001. I have to go back for exact reference. When we discussed this project with City Council prior to the execution of the MOU with State Parks. We did request council funding of some Harbor Fund monies, sort of seed money into this capital project. I believe it was $110,000 over 2 years, and we actually did transfer some of that out. I think it ended up being about $60,000 that we funded in Harbor Capital Funds money originally toward this project.
So is it original money, seed money?
Yes.
I get it. And then what's the product of this is going to be a planning thing that comes back to the Harbor Board, to the Planning Commission? Does it go through the cycle?
Let's see. So this product here will be part of our planning documents and planning and permitting for the land use permits locally and then Coastal Commission. And it's going to be of great assistance to us, too, in assisting the Department of Boating and Waterways identifying some of their necessary project elements to prepare a capital outlay program. And it might, maybe I'll go back and remind the council that we actually are in the planning, the city's local agency planning process on this project. We've applied for a conditional use permit, got us put into the environmental impact report. We hope as our report is in this report, we hope to put the environmental impact report out for public comment this summer. And then we will start again in the planning process. And this will help us, for example, the first element you see is conceptual design. That will help us in defining our conceptual plan. Also, this is some work that DBW says they need, too, with the dredging issues.
Thank you. That's the other reason I pulled it. I'm glad you said that, because I think deal with the money here. One of those positions is mayor, and not you in particular, but just in mayor in general, is that typical that someone outside of staff can deal with money?
We usually try very hard to not let the council spend any money, but in this case, what we are looking for here is another responsible signature, because the ability to make these changes when the time comes is important, and it is possible that people might not be available. So this is actually kind of an insurance policy for the organization.
And is that typical to have?
Pretty typical, yeah. Okay. Susan might want to comment on her from her background, but I believe it's pretty typical.
Yes, it is typical to have someone that's not a city staff member on this type of a, you know, program. Mm-hmm. We've had instances that I've seen where the mayor has been a transaction officer with Lake.
Thank you.
They don't let me do it much.
If ever. I move approval of A7.
Six. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. C1, consideration of moratorium on single-family residences and commercial and mixed-use areas. And let's see. Is that, do we have a staff person doing that, or is that Betty? I don't know. Rob?
I'll introduce it, just okay. In fact. It was on your previous council meeting discussion of it, and there was a majority to go forward, at least with bringing this back as a moratorium item. So I've prepared the moratorium. It does require 4/5 votes under the government code. The couple questions that were asked is this would be effective for 45 days, and then you would have to have a public hearing to extend it up to 10 months and 15 days. And so you will have a public hearing if it is approved tonight within the 45 days. That means it would have to be in the first meeting in August, because the second meeting in August would be too late. The other just real simple questions that came up dealt more with San Luis Paint specifically, and I did a memorandum on the subject of whether there was 4 legal lots on that property. There are 4 legal lots on the property, but I was concerned in reviewing the files and that there were a couple of letters from some of the people that spoke this evening, and their comments were, they, at least the way I zoning category, which is a mixed use, it allows a component of residential, but it has to have some commercial space on the property. And so I just wanted to point that out to them, that zoning amendment had been approved by council and that they do not have any set right that they have to. On the other change in your zoning that you made was requires a CUP. Right now it requires an MUP, and you changed that to require a CUP in our new zoning code. And so I just wanted to make it certain of these, you know, at least what I felt in the letters was they somehow felt they had a right to do single family residence. And even under the current code, although it allows single family residence, it certainly could go through the MUP process and be appealed to the CUP, to the Planning Commission, and on up. And it could be held incompatible with that area or for other reasons not be. So I just wanted to point out that they don't have a vested right. They don't even have an application in front of
and that's been filed yet. So I just wanted to point those things out to them. But it's in front of you tonight. Again, it requires 4/5 vote. I'll let, since it's Council Members Winholtz's item, I'll let her carry the arguments as whether it should be enacted or not. And if there's any other legal questions, I'll answer those for you.
One question on your comment there about that the San Luis Paints. If it's four lots and two of them are frontage on Main and two are behind, I'm assuming, are all of them required to have some commercial component then?
Yes, all four. Under the new one, yes, they're all. I'm pretty sure all four lots are in the MX.
And if they were to put in their application and everything now before we have that new zoning approved, does it still go through as?
It goes through the old one, which allows single. Okay. It allows single family right. residents, but it's not by right. It allows it, and they would have to go through that process. But and that's where there's been some confusion. You know, their question was, why didn't planning staff bring that up? They go under the current code until right. it's approved. That's how they process the applications. But I became concerned reviewing the file that the statements were made that they had an absolute right. And when I see people state those comments, I just want to bring it to their attention. There is no vested right here.
And do we have any idea where in the Coastal Commission process this zoning amendment is?
The general plan is the first order of their business, and they're still working through that application. So I would expect, in terms of process, to get the bigger policy, broader policy issues addressed first, mm-hmm. and then once all that's resolved, then the...
Over time, over the last 4 years, I've been very cognizant that a lot of new buildings have gone up on North Main Street, and that they're all residential and they're all single family for the most part. And that this isn't how I pictured North Main Street developing, which I thought was in sync with the North Main Street's specific plan. So here you have, this is at the corner of 41 and, well, actually it's just past 41 North, where you can see the Lucky 7 gas station. And the yellow building behind is that new triplex building that's just been added right close to the street. Anytime you want to change it, that'd be great, Nancy. This is that from the other side showing you that it's will be bound next to the Lucky 7. Just a different view of that picture. There's businesses on both sides of it. This is further up the street where, again, we had... it's a duplex with another house behind it. Again, in the commercial, I can't say commercial because it's not zoned commercial, but it is mixed-use commercial area. Closer, you can see in the background the high sign for the businesses that are just beyond it. And here's a corner that's getting ready to probably at some point be developed. Going further up north, this is a shot of, oh, that's that same building from the other side. Next to it on the corner, I'm sorry, Nancy, go just a second. There's a little one-story house there on your left that was commercial at one point that has now become residential. And then this corner nearest us, of course, is commercial. This is, again, almost probably up past the Chinese restaurant. I don't know if it's quite to Lolo's yet. Or near there, near the old Crittle House. I thought I had it right. And where two more residences have come in. And then further north, here's two more houses. As you can see, the lighting store is just in the background, the one business that's left up there besides the paint store. And this is just a closer view, how they've... now line the street. This is going back to downtown area, another area, though it's not the North Main Street specific plan. It is on Beach, where again single family homes have been put sandwiched in between commercial visitor serving motels. And this is over on night before we talk about this moratorium. But again, it's going to be another residential facility. My point is that, and I drove up and down there many times, I do regularly, but if you go through, if you start at 41, it's pretty much all commercial of some kind or another. And then you see the few houses that I've spotted out, but as these empty lots are being developed, they're turning residential, not commercial. And that's all the way up to
San Jacinto. So that area is still holding strong in terms of being commercial, being retail, having sales tax. We just talked about sales tax. And yet these little places are sneaking in here that are residential. If you go from San Jacinto North, you'll find those two businesses. You'll find the Manfredo Shopping Center, which is the last bastion of any type of, and it's not even really retail anymore. It's hay printing, it's the newspaper. So even that has been lost to more of a business office type of area. So in light of the concerns of, and in spite of the concerns of the people who are buying that San Luis property, or even the Stollmeyers, who at some point will probably want to turn their property residential because they're so isolated, they've talked about it doesn't work for them that they need to move, that I could see letting go of San Jacinto North. It's already been converted, and very recently, you know, since I've been on council, all those empty lots have gone residential. But I think we have a duty to North Morro Bay to retain their businesses, that we need that sales tax up there, that we need those infrastructure types of businesses, the muffler company, the SenCals, getting ready to put in a new business. We need those kinds of businesses that locals use. They're there, they're established. We don't want to see them go away. I don't want to see them go away. So I think that what we need to do is do this moratorium to maintain that area. Is that what we want to do between San Jacinto and Highway 41? And I think that Mr. Schultz outlined the reasons very succinctly in his ordinance. If you look at those, it has to do, and the gentleman earlier questioned, you know, how can it hurt businesses that go in that they pay for than we do of residents? You know, they put in maybe curb sidewalk and gutter if they're in certain zones. But that whole infrastructure need, I think, is a major reason why we need to look at this. And the idea that, and this is exactly what's happened north of San Jacinto, is that case by case, that whole area has been switched. Its base zoning, by default, has become residential, even though councils in the past zoned it differently. So it's been done case by case without intent, and so therefore we don't have a long-term range plan. So I think those are all very good reasons why we need to stop. Look at this. Is this where we want to go? We're at the turning point now. Doing the moratorium does not say we're not going to continue to maybe allow some conversion or have residential, or because mixed use is what we want. We've said that. But do we want single family? Do we want single family in the midst of our commercial? And I don't think that we do. So we need to have the discussion. So this is not to say we're stopping it. This is to say let's stop and talk and say what we want. I would go, but this ordinance is aimed specifically at the mixed commercial residential area, which is North Main Street. My intent when I made the motion 2 weeks ago, and as I wrote it in my staff report, was for commercial and mixed use areas. My concern is not just for North Main Street. My concern is for Quintana. My concern is for the mixed-use areas that are left downtown that we have overlays on. And so I think that area needs to be looked at as well. So what I would do is take this ordinance, and on page 2, on section 3, towards the bottom of the page, I would change the wording. After mixed commercial residential district where such applications have been permitted, I would change submitted to permitted. And I'm not sure where, but I guess in the beginning or wherever it says MRC, that I would add and other commercial zones. I would not restrict it to just the mixed commercial zones. And that's my presentation.
Okay, questions?
I have a couple of concerns. Number one, there's a requirement for a 4/5 vote. What do you think the emergency is citywide, because you want this to include not just North Morro Bay, but you've mentioned Quintana, you've mentioned maybe South Morro Bay, you've mentioned other South Main Street. What is there about the entire city that you're having a problem with having even the person to apply for a single family residence? If you were listening to our attorney, he said that we have in fact changed our zoning ordinance. It's not back yet. It's not going to go into effect right away. But what is it that you're trying to do with an emergency ordinance citywide?
My intent, because I don't know who's applying, who has applied, who is getting ready to get permitted, I don't know what's in the pipeline. So that becomes an unknown. So before something gets approved, I think we need to decide, is that the kind of development that we want? So therefore, it becomes an emergency for me. There's two empty lots still in this area between San Jacinto and Highway 41. I don't know what's been proposed for that. My guess is it's single family. That is against what I think needs to happen there, which is at least mixed use, if not commercial. So that's my concern for the emergency of it. I don't know what's being proposed in other parts of town. We don't hear about it until it's gone through the process. And so that's my concern.
When you say they may apply, what I heard Rob say is that an application has to go through our process. And our process is set up so that it will be looked at. Mm-hmm. And it will be evaluated based upon where the application is. And it's the same process we've been using for a long time, and it's worked so far. I don't see this is going to change anything.
But that process has allowed the conversion of North Main Street to become residential. So to me, that hasn't worked, unless you think that's appropriate development. And it, when I look at general plan compared to that, that doesn't match for me. So I feel like we need to stop and look at that and see what's happening. I think the other point is, because this talks about submittal, if we go with a moratorium that says if you've been submitted, then you can do it, then you won't be caught by this moratorium. So again, you're getting projects in there that you haven't made.
Have established that may or may not include the Planning Commission and may or not include this City Council. We have appeals to us all the time. And that's part of the process, and I'm comfortable with that process.
Could I jump in here for a little bit?
Sure.
So what I'm understanding, Mr. Ambo, is that our new zoning ordinance would take away the overlay, would prevent this kind of transition to residential, the way we've got that put together.
Not really. The new zoning ordinance still has the mixed-use zone, mm-hmm. but the new ordinance wouldn't allow standalone residential development. It allows true mixed use where the residents would right. need to be above and behind the residents.
And by the way,
behind the business.
So it would allow for mixed use, but not standalone single family residents.
That's right.
Secondly, these are all single family residents, with the exception of one which might have been a duplex. The emergency that's been created here is that this council came in new in 2004. We hacked our way through zoning, and we decided about the zoning in this town, and we made a change up there on North Main, okay? The emergency comes because everyone who owns land up there or builds things up there or is a realtor, and that's what we heard from tonight, property owners, realtors, architects, builders, everyone sees that change coming. Our emergency as a council is that we can't get it out of Coastal Commission for another year, and they know that. This stuff that you saw on the overhead tonight is going on in the last 2 years, maybe, two of them 3 years, okay? And they know this. We hear the plan from San Luis Paints, okay? They say they're planning, and they're planning like any property owner would at this point, I think. If I was a property owner up there right now, I'd be saying to myself, wow, they're going to get that change from the zoning ordinance. It's going to be in place. I better go ahead with those plans I've always thought about. Sell the business, get the lots ready, and build single-family residence. No property owner in his or her right mind, no developer in his or her right mind would rather build commercial than residential. You can build it, sell it, pay for your own, and be done, you know, and be done for the rest of your life. Commercial, what are you doing? You're building something for the town. You're building a dry cleaner shop, you know, a revenue enhancer for the town, and you got to own it and lease it or rent it out to somebody. Or that is a visual entryway to the city. And as they come down Highway 1 from the north into this city, they see on the right large green bushes. They see a power plant. And then they see on the left what's attracting them, you know. So they see things like Taco Temple or Spencer's Market, or, you know, they see the gas station or the Del Mar Market there. They see those things. They say, I want a Coke. I need some gas. And they pull off. But the thing is if we're not going to do a moratorium and reconsider what we want to have happen up there, then these property owners are going to do the thing that they're ensuring their own safety, their personal singular safety against the city that's made a different decision, that we want mixed use. And I think that that zoning ordinance is going to elevate the review when they're mixed use. It will elevate the review. So when Mr. Back, but I'm not willing to sit here and look at what's going on in North, along Main Street, North Morro Bay, and see it all converted to residential, and really if you looked at the buildings, to all converted to the same kind of residential, and to lose that entire commercial sector because, and I'm not going to make a long speech, I swore, but could I ask you another question, Mr. Ambo? The property that is on Main Street in Bonita, it's flat land right now. Mm-hmm. Has there been anything, any plans submitted to your office?
Yes, yes, there has.
So there's that whole property gone. It's residential, correct?
That's what their proposal is. But I might add that the staff feedback is that we would encourage them to do commercial.
You know? Or at least a little mixed use along Main Street.
So a true mixed use.
Yes, but we don't really have a right to insist on that.
Well, if the council felt that it would be more appropriate and compatible with the neighborhood, then that's a very that's a firm finding. And if then that request went through to the applicant, then that's a very legitimate finding.
And we would see this one, obviously, it's a subdivision. Is that the reason we'd see it?
Yes.
Yeah. But the thing is all those property owners up there have got to see that zoning ordinance coming. That's what constitutes the emergency.
I'm not sure how you could pass an ordinance that would require a business to go in there and force them to be there. I know it sounds ridiculous. You can't make money out there. I had a phone, but it has, for as long as I've been here, it's been the kiss of death trying to operate a business. Now, Manfredo Square was mentioned. All right, the barbershop's been there about 19 years, and they're doing it. Hey, Printing's been there. They're not really a retailer in that sense. Within the last year or so, the tanning place went out. The carpet shop that was in there went out. There was a bookstore there that's now a used computer place, or at least right behind it. Manfredo Square is not a place a retailer can make any money. And that's just my opinion, so when somebody complains. I can see where it would be laudable to say, yes, that would be a great, nice business district. I'm not sure having a cleaners on a corner out there would be something that would make people want to get off the highway, but it's not practical. I can see why people want to convert their business property to something else because it'll never be worth anything as business property, not for a long, long time. Now, if we wanted to buy it and hold on to it, I could see that, and you know, figure out some way of forcing them to hold on to it so maybe 20 or 30 years from now it'll be viable for business, but it never has been yet, and I don't see anything changing out there to make it more viable. And, yeah, you could add more businesses, but there are a few limited success stories, but look at San Luis Paint. You know, they want to move farther in town. Now, they've been there a long time. They've been successful. But obviously, it's moving down there. They're going to be more successful because that's in the business area of the community. So you've seen a lot of things come and go out there. Taco Temple is a rarity, but it's right there by the market. and that's more of a shopping center. But short of building more shopping centers, you're not going to get individual stores to do any business out there. And we've been told that by real estate people. And one that was in here a while back that didn't have any immediate access to Grind sat right here and told us that same thing. You don't make money on commercial out in North Morro Bay. Right now, you don't make money on commercial in this city. We've got vacant business property that can't be rented because nobody wants it. And it's downtown even. You can't do business in this city right now and make a lot of money.
Well, I have to agree with that. You almost had me when you were saying from 41 to San Jacinto, because I do think that we should have commercial pockets. I think that is important, and that one pretty much is already a commercial pocket. It's mostly commercial.
Would you define pocket for me? What are you picturing in terms of size?
Property in North Morro Bay. They can't sell it that way. They can't get anybody interested that way. In fact, they have requests from the people who do have retail property in North Morro Bay. If anything comes up downtown, let me know. I want to move. So we can't force a retail area to happen if the community doesn't support it. And I know it's what comes first, the chicken or the egg, but obviously this chicken ain't laying any eggs in North Morro Bay. It's not happening. And to say that we can't put multifamily housing, which I disagree. I think most of those things that you showed were at least duplexes, some triplexes up there. It is multifamily that is going in there. A lot of it, not all of it, I agree. But also I look at, you know, when a friend of mine has a lot there out in North Morro Bay. The lot next to it is empty, owned by his family. He's got his private residence there. It's been there forever. They plan to build another house next to it for the family. Are we to tell them, even though they've had this building, this residence on North Main Street forever and ever, no, you can't do this anymore? It's not, to me, that is not practical. It's imposing financial hardship on people because of something we want to happen that isn't happening, and you can't make it happen. If our downtown was just packed to the gills with stores and there was no available space, then maybe there would be a need for it in North Morro Bay, but right now that just doesn't exist. And to try and make it happen by not letting people use their property for private homes isn't going to help. It's not going to make it happen.
Look, can I clarify a couple of things that both you and Mr. Pierce said? And that is about the area that I'm talking. The North Street specific plan goes from 41 all the way north. I'm only talking about 41 up to San Jacinto.
But you said you're talking all over town.
Well, let me clarify where I am right now. The reason I limited that area, as you call it a pocket, that whole strip to me is commercial in some way, retail in some way, except for a couple of places and two major empty places that will turn the tide one way or the other. I think we don't want to just retain that area. I think we want to support it and enhance it. When I was leafleting North Main Street for the business workshop that we had, allow residential to start coming in between their businesses, they will literally become pockets and separated, and they'll end up like Stollmeyer's, and they'll end up like San Luis Paint. They'll be the last two businesses on that strip, and then they'll go away. So I'm saying from San Jacinto north, there's nothing to give up. It's already gone. So I'm not talking that area, okay? I'm talking from San Jacinto down to Highway 41, that area right now needs immediate protection for the reasons that Ms. DeMeritt stated much better than I did, because of the zoning ordinance is where it is. And so we haven't got the review that we need. At the least, it should come back as a CUP right now rather than the minor use. So it does elevate the review. We could at least maybe do that tonight if you don't want to do something different and you want to restrict it to that area. My concern is, my fear is what's happening to North Main Street, happening to Quintana, in light of the project that came before planning list last week, in light of the single families that are in the visitor commercial serving zone on Beach Street. These little things are sneaking in to our areas. Don't we want to look at what's left and see what's there and say, oh, yeah, that's okay because that neighborhood's already turned. Or, yeah, we need to preserve that in order to protect and enhance the businesses that are still there so they don't go under. Those businesses, I think, between 41 and San Jacinto are, I don't know if they're thriving and making hundreds of thousands of dollars, but they're there. They've been there for years. SenCal, the all those car things and the storage place and those places are viable. Certainly Taco Temple has brought a lot of people in there, and Spencer's has done an excellent job. So although that one area is very vital, and I would hate us to do anything to allow creeping to come in unintentionally.
Mayor Peters, I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
And then drive it to discussion.
Then we'll have more discussion.
Okay. Because I view it as an emergency, because I just passed an initiative to go on the ballot for a sales tax, and I rely on commercial businesses, I'd make a motion that we accept ordinance number 518 for an interim urgency ordinance with these slight changes. And the second, whereas, after MCR district, I would add between San Jacinto and Highway 41.
And headed by the city?
Yes. But so that would be my motion.
I would second that.
Okay, discussion, Bill.
Okay, minor amount of discussion. We were talking about enticing people off the highway to visit the business district of North Morro Bay. I wonder how many people in this room are watching Remember Conn's Trading Post. You remember Conn's Trading Post? It was a gaudily painted building, white with bright red trim, and it had a bunch of, quote, antiques stacked on the sidewalk out front. And inside it was packed to the ceiling with junk. And we had a lot of tourists figure that this is a little hick town, and they got off the highway to see if they could find that bargain because the locals wouldn't be smart enough to realize what it was worth. And that building was one of the few that was probably, well, he had no overhead, but thriving business. And I'm going to guess that business, the actual building itself, was constructed around the turn of the century, considering the construction materials. It later became Taco Bell or right in there somewhere. But that was the tourist draw that got people off the highway.
Okay, any more discussion?
Could I make one little change to the yes. motion for you? Instead of accepted the ordinance, it would be adopted, as I understand it. So it would be adopting of ordinance 518 by number and title only with the changes that she mentioned.
Okay. I've got a question on the motion. If so what you're proposing here is this one small district, just San Jacinto to 41, that you want to put, I'm sorry. that you want to put a moratorium on until we can what?
Until we can decide. Actually, it might be unnerving, but what our vision is for that area, to really look at North Morro Bay and decide, are we going to abdicate it totally to residential, which is what will happen, or do we want to conserve and preserve, you know, what commercial we have, okay? The other thing that we can gain by this with the moratorium is we just let kind of the dust settle for a minute, and we look at things like elevating it to a CUP, maybe, which I think I heard somebody say, Rob was just suggesting that we could just do something like that, or Betty was saying it. But so I think what that does, it just gives us time to create vision and to hear from the public and to take care of what I really deem to be an emergency at this point.
And Mr. Ambo, do we know, are there projects already in the pipeline for any of those areas now that it's been restricted to a smaller?
If you give me a second here, mm-hmm. Let me check.
I'm really reluctant to do this not having looked at the area to make sure what I'm talking about.
We actually have one proposal in right now on Las Tunas for a single-family detached residence.
That wouldn't
residence.
Be part of it. We're just 41 to San Jacinto right now.
Oh. We've got an incomplete application at Main and Bonita, and then the Planning Commission recently approved a map for seven homes. Other than that, the other projects are under construction or have been permitted. There's a couple others that are under construction. I think some of them were picked up on the photos.
Madam Mayor, I'm trying to visualize number of vacant pieces of property from 41 to San Jacinto. You've got basically, you've got the quick food place. You've got a trailer park, for lack of a better word of it. You've got a mini storage. You've got what used to be a commercial center out there that's now residential, and it's been that way for years. Then you've got a mechanic, a furniture store.
Welding shop.
Yeah, a welding shop in there. Then you've got a mixed use and a pizza place. And then you've got a vacant piece of property. But, that area is pretty well is filled up. You've got a motel out there, another restaurant. I can't see where all this action can happen. I think Bonita is about the only thing I can visualize. Is that about it? Or everything else is either done or already been built out for years.
The Bonita one is by Domino's, right?
By Fire Station 2.
Yeah, and then there's another piece of property just a few blocks up that's also empty. There's a couple of places that probably haven't been, converted, but like you're talking, the old mobile home park could easily be changed over. Maybe not in the next year.
Yeah, you don't look at just flat land, and there's more than just the Bonita. Not a lot more, but there's another couple of lots I remember up there. But you don't just look at those.
We're not talking a very long period of time.
If I could ask Mr. Schultz, typically how long is this going to take for the staff to come back with?
And at the 45-day, basically, that would be a public hearing to extend it for 10 months and 15 days until you did either planning studies or the revised zoning caught up with it or whatever. So I don't assume at the 45-day period you would be enacting a whole new plan for this area.
We'd be looking at a year, roughly, plus or minus.
It depends where this would be on priority. What it would do is he'd come back and ask you, okay, where is this a priority? You now have a moratorium on this area. Where do you want the priority to go, as Councilman DeMeritt mentioned about, looking at this area?
Madam Mayor, one final comment on my part. Reducing this just to the area from Highway 41 to San Jacinto, to me, simply emphasizes the fact that it's not an emergency. And it shouldn't be described as an emergency. There are things happening. There are a couple pieces of property there that have been vacant for a long time. This is not an emergency.
I think the thing that can happen is that we can get those business people in here, and maybe they'll say, let it go. You're sticking your nose in where it doesn't belong. But until we hear from the public, we don't know that. And that I think we need to be more precautionary and take care of, quote, business than not, and protect them.
Well, when I was looking at this, I just felt it was too broad. It took the whole city, and I wasn't ready to do that. I in theory, I'm thinking, okay, that's pretty good, San Jacinto to 41, but without actually going out there and looking at it, I'm really uncomfortable doing this tonight. In all honesty, it's not something that I wouldn't maybe consider in the future, but without specifically looking at it with that in mind, I'm uncomfortable doing it.
Well, then I would just say that a yes vote on this means something like you believe in a commercial life in North Morro Bay, and a no vote believes that you don't believe in that, and probably call a question.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And opposed?
No.
3-2, the motion fails.
Okay. Would the council be interested in entertaining raising current permission out there?
And as you know, it's also listed on our Planning Commission agendas to alert people that we even have applications in, so that people can come in advance to review the files and provide their comments before the recommendations developed or the decisions made. And again, as you know, that's an appealable process, a very deliberate appealable process. That decision's appealable to the council, to the Planning Commission, and that decision's, their decision's appealable to you.
But Mr. Ambo, isn't that noticing only related to non-single-family dwellings? That those single-family dwellings aren't listed there.
They still trigger a minor use permit, and that still requires noticing.
But it's not listed where the public can see that. Like when you were saying it's listed in the Planning Commission notes, it's single families aren't listed in there.
You're right. You're right. A single-family detached residence is not. But I think they may be in this area because it's a minor use permit.
I don't ever remember seeing them listed there. That's just my experience.
I'd be happy to look into it, but I think they are.
Because I think that's a good idea. And if you wanted to bring back something like that, I think that would be worth discussing. All right, C2. This is consideration of calendaring future discussions.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, unless something happened with this on June 26th, this was a carryover item, I believe, wherein two members of the council were interested in having an item agendized, and your procedures call for the following. If only one other member supports hearing the item, an item will be listed on the next available agenda to consider the matter of whether or not the council will take up the item itself. The council will take no action on the substance of the matter at this second review unless there is adequate public notice and information is provided for the council to make an informed decision. If at this meeting a majority of the council approves, the staff will prepare a staff report for the subsequent agenda if formal council action is required. And that is where you are. The item that we're talking about is further discussion of the Off-Leash Dog Park. And so the question would be whether or not you wish to attempt to calendar this at a future meeting. And if so, what you want the staff to bring in the way of information.
Okay. Betty, I think you were the one that brought this forward. So.
No, I'm not. I don't understand this. And so
you were the dog park issue. You were the one that wanted that agenda.
The item rather than the item itself. That's the purpose of this. So we were trying to distinguish between those two issues.
And it got continued a couple of times because we didn't get to it.
I have no interest in discussing this.
Okay.
Moving right along.
All right. Unless someone else does.
We don't have to take any action on this then if we're just going to drop it. Okay. Yeah, the dog park is moving in a different direction, we think. Okay. D2, consideration of slip fee adjustment and how it affects the Harbor Department budget. Rick?
Good evening again, Madam Mayor and Council. You put this item on your agenda at your last meeting. I've tried to provide you some background on information on the amount of slip fees we collect and some samples of if you would choose to propose a reduction on what the impacts might be on our budget. I would be happy to answer questions for you.
Okay. I'm the one who brought this up, and I brought it up as just trying to do something to help our fishers get through this rough period. What I had in mind, well, I didn't know what I had in mind, but it was kind of directed by email that I got that I think I copied all of you on from Barbara Stickle, where she said that apparently, and I think in Oregon they have done this, where right now if the city could possibly waive late charges on slip rent until October and allow us, if we are able to pay our full months, 12 months rent at that time, to also take advantage of the discounted rate that slip holders are allowed to pay for paying the entire year in advance, which is normally allowed in July, it would be of great assistance in helping us cope with and survive this disaster and what they're referring to as the salmon fishing. So what it is, it's a unique situation where they're not able to fish the way they had been. Barbara was going to be here tonight, but they actually got an opportunity to go fishing, so she went. And that, I think, would be my suggestion to the council to consider exactly this, to waive the late charges so we don't lose any income to the Harbor Fund, or at least not much. The late charges wouldn't amount to much. And still allow them the 12-month rent benefit so that we wouldn't be penalizing them for something that they couldn't help. That would be my suggestion.
Could we ask Mr. Algert what kind of impact that would have upon his operation?
The fiscal impact would probably be negligible, as the mayor states. I think we'd probably lose a little bit of late fees and possibly you might get an extra person or two who might pay the 10% annual discount in October. I mean, it's not much. So fiscal, I don't see anything. Operationally, was your question. I mean, if your question is there going to be extra work in this, there's a little extra work for us to go back and we prepared the system as it's set up now and the billings and stuff. So, but I don't see a whole lot of extra work.
It's not insurmountable, in other words.
I think we could deal with it.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, I had highlighted the same exact wording on the copy that I got, and I would support it.
Okay, well, I'll make that my motion.
Second.
That we would waive only. Can we? Can you divide that?
Well,
didn't seem practical.
Madam Mayor, I and Ms. Winneltz, I was assuming that you were referring to our commercial slip fee holders or commercial
right.
slip holders, which is approximately 47 folks in the slips, and that's all types of fisheries. Those are the folks with the monthly recurring accounts and who get the benefit of the 10% annual discount for paying it a year in advance. And that is all types of fisheries.
That's what I seconded.
Yeah, I wasn't going to limit it.
Okay. And so there's a need for all the fishers to have this benefit.
We've had a lot of discussion lately about really a lot of different fisheries. I think the most current crisis that we're talking about is in salmon fisheries. Almost very, very, a large proportion of our fishermen do fish salmon, hold salmon permits.
Any more discussion?
Madam Mayor, I had a question, and that is, does the motion need to contain any kind of date or trigger date or anything to be...
For this calendar year?
Yeah, or whatever. To make sense?
I'm looking at... Could we? I guess I would ask for a clarification on exactly what the motion was, if you might help me. And
the motion was to waive the late charges and to allow them to still have the discount for the 12-month.
Waive late charges until October. So
right.
I'm assuming that we're talking about January to October. We're talking about year 2006. Am I correct?
I might make a clarification on that, but that was my understanding, too, that you were asking us to waive late charges until October, which was Mrs. Stickles' request.
Right.
Typically, we receive we provide the opportunity to pay the 10% annual fee in advance, to get a 10% discount for paying the annual slip fees in advance in July only. And that's on a fiscal year. So that's the 4 months I think she's referring to. And so I was assuming that this motion would have us waive all late fees until October. Starting November 1, we would again put in place late fees. And we would also give all people the opportunity to pay the annual slip fees 12 months in advance up until November 1 and receive the 10% discount.
Yes, thank you for clarifying my motion.
Then I have a question. It wouldn't be retroactive back to July?
Yes, I think we're talking from July 1.
Okay, is
I mean, that's
clear?
Like 10 days. I don't think that'll be much of an issue for them to work out.
I thought what I heard him say that they could pay from November to November, when they usually pay July to July.
No.
Okay, all clear?
Let's do it.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. That's a D2. D3, discussion on potential funding for the new Futures Committee. And I believe this is Melody.
Okay. Well, as you heard earlier today, you heard from several members of the new Futures Committee. We are planning this public workshop at the end of September. And we have been looking for money, sincerely looking for money. We've applied twice now to the NEP, and they find us outside their mission statement, I suppose. I would refer you to the last paragraph of this document on the back of the page, and that is that some free services have been delivered already. Not only their volunteer time, but we've had graphic designers working on logos. The website development has been really spectacular, and I would just like to take a moment to publicly thank Mike Baird, a Cloisters resident, who is hosting us right now. It is password protected at this point because we're just in the point of developing the last few couple of pages, and then we'll have a public announcement about it. But his website is morrow-bay.com, and because if you go to morrowbay.com, you'll get somewhere else. And But morrow-bay.com is a great website, and he's been doing all the development, all the hosting, with the help of New Futures members. We've been sending material and photos and such. So what I had suggested is that we would, members of the Communication Working Group had thought that by now we've shown our sincere interest in this. We meet a couple of times a week as a full committee, a couple times a month as working groups. So we're fully committed to this activity. And we think that the central mission in this whole project is to have the public involved and the public informed about what's going on. Our work is modeled on the work of several other communities. The city of Bellingham, for example, has done the same kind of project. The city of Alameda has done this, and we know about their work. Now, with all that said, I know that the budget's tight. And I know that it was so tight the first year I was on council that I swore I'd never use my discretionary money. And I didn't, actually. I kept that pledge and saved the city a whole $1,500. What happens next? Can we step in then and get something for this city? And that's really our main point. And we've been in good contact with LS Power and intend to stay in contact with them. So I would just suggest I'll make a motion. I would move that the council approve funding for the New Futures Committee to the amount of $2,500 by using $500 discretionary money from each of our accounts, and I'm sure that's open to discussion.
Comment.
Do we hear a second?
Second.
Okay, comment.
Now can I comment after the second?
Yes. Yeah. Only 2 seconds.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I sent Melody, and I'm also a member of the New Futures Committee, and I sent Melody an email proposing this, and I still suggest that we do the same thing. $500 from each of us would be $2,500. That would get them through this first project, which is September 30th, public input. We need public input for this process. Now, we can look, if there are other things that come up, we can look at our mid-year budget review to see if there are other ways that we can support them, if need be. But this, by doing it this way, we don't touch the budget. We leave it exactly where it is. We just passed it. Why do we need to touch it right now? So I support this.
Bill?
I was going to make a different motion. I was going to say, because I've seen how busy the weekend was, and I'm going to say that all these predictions of higher TOT, I would say I was going to make the motion that we fund these costs not to exceed $3,000 and just take it out of the general fund because it's $3,000. And not 30, not 70,000. And that would have been my motion. Considering what we're not doing in the amount of discretionary funds anymore, I'm a little reluctant to do away with that much of it this early in the year because mm-hmm. there are so many other projects that come up. I would rather this motion fail or get withdrawn and we just give them not to exceed $3,000 and get it done with.
Well, that's kind
it's
of
a
where,
worthwhile thing.
That's kind of where I was going, and I was going to say the council does have an expense fund, and I don't think we've come close to using it all. We've been so thrifty as far as travel expenses and things like that. So I was going to say, why don't we go ahead and fund this amount from the council fund, and then if at the end of the year we end up having spent it all before the fiscal year ends, then we can kick in from our discretionary funds. That was
I withdraw
my
idea. Second. Let's go somewhere else.
Well, I'll put back the second. I think if I'm a
so can I make a new
like
motion?
That. Sure.
So the motion's been completely withdrawn that was on the floor, and now we're going for a new motion.
A new right. motion. The new motion is that we fund the New Futures working New Futures group not to exceed $3,000. And include in the payment of that $500 from my discretionary funds.
You don't need that in the motion. You can do that any time
okay.
on your own.
Thank you, Thad.
Yeah, drop that part out of the motion. Just say not to exceed $3,000.
Well, I move that we fund them to an amount not to exceed $3,000.
Second.
All right, is that going to come from the council's fund or just the general fund? I mean, I was going to make it specific to the council's fund.
I'd like it from the council's fund.
I think staff got the direction.
Well, I'd like
well,
to know
that
where,
have
you're,
to be
where
part
you're,
of the motion.
Where you're
yeah.
the money, you're taking the money from.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so you need to
we
say
We need
that.
An appropriation.
So $2,500 from the council's fund
right.
and $500 from my discretionary fund.
That's the motion?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll still second it.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Guy, I think we finished. No, we didn't. Future agenda items? That was the one thing we didn't get to. Anyone have any future agenda items? All right, I had a wonderful quote that I was going to use, and I left it at home. So we're just going to have to go with happy vacation, everyone, and we're going to have one, too. Thank you. We are adjourned.